actually first, if everyone would join me to stand up for a moment of silence. For John Reichert was a trustee for East Bay Township in the early 200s, and he recently passed away. So if we could just have a moment of silence for John Reichert and for his service to the township. Okay, thank you. We'll call the meeting of October 9th, the regular Township Board meeting, to order, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and we'll start with roll call attendance, please.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Lyle.
Yes.
Walters.
Present.
Merrill.
Here.
Cortade.
Here.
Brent.
Here. Okay, presentation of the agenda. The board has in front of them a typical consent calendar. We have removed the reports tonight because of two public hearings. So any reports that we've received by mail, we've forwarded on to the board. You know, the consent calendar in front of you, you'll notice that the budget adjustments that you received are 2017-47 through 67, and the engineering payments are to MC Sandblasting and to Matt's Underground. The regular business before the Board of Trustees, we have an audit and accounting recommendation. We have an Easttown PUD continuance, Brookside Deferment and Developers Agreement, and then two public hearings, first regarding the short-term rental ordinance, and secondly regarding the lighting special assessment districts. If there is anything else, I sent to the board, and I have paper copies for you on the carpeting purchase in the Township Hall. So we can put that on at the end if the board sees fit, or we can hold that until November. It would be much easier timing and logistics-wise for us to put it on the end of this meeting, if that's fine. Does anybody object to that?
Why don't we put it on now, and if it looks as though we're going to exceed 10 o'clock,
sure,
we can make a determination then.
Sure, we'll put that at number 5. Okay, we have an agenda, and we'll move forward. Is there any conflict of interest? Is any board member declaring a conflict of interest this evening? Okay, seeing none, it is time for public comment. Now is the time that the public can address the board. You're welcome to come up to the podium, say your name and address, and speak to the board on any issue which you'd like us to hear. Specifically with respect to short-term rentals, we are having a public hearing on that tonight, and you'll have an opportunity during that agenda item to talk about short-term rentals. So this public comment period would be about anything except short-term rentals. Is there anybody who'd like to approach the board? Welcome. Good evening. Your name and address?
My name is Carol Nelson. I live at 843 Munson Avenue on East Bay. I think I understood you right. I can talk about the short-term?
Short-term rentals, we have a place during the public hearing specifically for residents and interested parties to speak about short-term rentals. So this would be the time for anything but short-term rentals.
But I'm not quite understanding that. It's about rentals?
Correct. Later in the agenda, you'll have an opportunity to speak on rentals.
On rentals.
Yep. You wanted to address the board regarding rentals only.
Yes, because I live next door to rental property.
Okay. Very good. We'll have an opportunity for you later.
Okay.
Any other public comment? Okay, we'll move on. Correspondence. I believe the only correspondence we've received is with respect to short-term rentals. Sue, correct? I think we had three documents. They were all emailed or on your desk. As I mentioned, we'll be trying to, you know, because of the public hearings, we'll forego the oral reports that we usually receive from the updates, and we'll see everybody next month. So. Consent calendar. Ann, would you review the consent calendar, please?
Sure. The purpose of the consent calendar is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one board motion without discussion. Any member of the board, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent calendar be removed from there and placed elsewhere on the agenda for full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. If any item is not removed from the consent calendar, the action noted in parentheses on the agenda is approved by a single board action adopting the consent calendar. This evening you have board minutes from September 11, 2017, regular meeting. From the general fund, checks numbered 13343 through 13391 for $59,496.43. The emergency fund, check numbers 3678 through 3688, paid in the amount of $9,321.40. And the receiving fund, check numbers 2488 through 2502 for $140,400.33. The escrow fund, check numbers 1495 through 1504 for $20,774.40. There were two payrolls, one dated 9/3/2017 through 9/16/2017, check number 6065 through 6071, and that totaled $35,263.63. And payroll dated September 17th through September 30th, check number 6072 through 6076, totaled $41,738.16. And special pay for a park commission for August 2017 meeting, check number 6064, totaled $880.01. And all of the withholding was also taken out of that same check number. Total payroll, $77,881.80. And total amount paid, $307,874.36. Proposed budget adjustments, 2017-48 through 2017-67. And engineering projects requested for payment, MC sandblasting and painting, and Matt's Underground.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, any member of the board, the public, or staff can ask that an item be removed from the consent calendar. At this time, is there any member of the public who would like something removed from the consent calendar? Okay, is there any member of the staff or board who would like something removed from the consent calendar? Okay, hearing none, do we have a motion from a board member?
I make the motion to accept the consent calendar as presented.
Support.
Okay, motion has been made and supported to approve the consent calendar. We'll do a roll call vote, Ann.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Forte?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. All right, thank you. We'll move on to the business before the Board of Trustees. The first item is for the audit and accounting recommendation. So you have an overview of the process that we've gone through. I think, Sue, you kind of brought the timing and the process with respect to the audit before us. Can you remind us of those time frames that when we went out?
We went out for audits in or request proposals the end of July. Those proposals needed to be back for review by the 31st of August. The three treasurer, clerk, and supervisor met to review the three proposals that we received and the two accountant bookkeeper proposals, and came back after interviewing with the recommendation before the board.
Okay. Again, so you know that we had three proposals for us for auditing. That was Gaybridge and Company, Stevens, Kernovic, and Tucker, and also Raymond Robson. And then the two proposals for accounting services were from Stevens, Kernovic, and Tucker, and Raymond Robson. There's budget implications down here, as you can see, the audit prices for the fiscal years, and specifically the recommendation that the three of us looked at is that we engage Gaybridge and Company for the fiscal years of 2018 and 2019, and then have the ability to contract with them for two more successive years on an annual basis. and then engage Stevens, Kernovic, and Tucker to be utilized for the accounting. And then the funding for that is provided through the budget. If we utilize their services through this year, we'll utilize what's in the budget this year, and then, of course, we're going through the budget process with that for 2018. Is there questions that the board members have, or is it open for discussion? I would say, just for clarification, Stevens, Kervonik, and Tucker, that is the firm, well, the principal is the firm who was part of Abraham and Gaffney, who did our audit for 8 years. So basically, the principal would be moving from the position of being the auditor to the accounting. So they are very familiar with the township, very familiar with what needs they have and so forth. Gaybridge and Company was new to us. I guess they did submit a proposal last time 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and this time, and we talked with them and also asked some other supervisors who they used and who they were happy with, and I did have a positive feedback from Gaybridge, someone who used Gaybridge. So, is there a motion?
Okay, question.
Sure.
Gaybridge.
Yep.
The three of you met with them,
mm-hmm.
and you were all comfortable with that firm? I'd never heard of it, and that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, they did submit 4 years ago.
I was going to say, because I found that mm-hmm. yesterday when
right.
I was looking.
Really?
Right. They have partners locally and in the Grand Rapids area, and the principal that would oversee things is here in Traverse City. But I liked about the combination is the fact that Steve Kernovic's team has a good understanding of our records already, and they moving forward with a not to exceed amount billed as needed or as used, I felt much better with a new firm coming in because we had that base and that foundation. So that's why I went with
okay.
with that.
Mm-hmm. I guess my thoughts on Gaybridge were, I thought that their proposal was fine, the interview was fine. I guess my only, you know, and they do a lot of townships, they do. Their audit fee was obviously very attractive. You know, and I go back to that adage, is sometimes you get what you pay for. And I guess really what it comes down to is when you look at the number of billable hours they're factoring in. So, like, for example, Raymond Robson gave the number of typical hours that they have that they spend on an engagement with townships. I didn't look at counties because they're much larger, mm-hmm. but for townships, they're typically spending, I want to say it was like between 200 and 225.
Mm-hmm.
Hours for an engagement for auditing. Gaybridge, I think, was that 120 to 140 mark. So therein lies the difference in the amount. But again, you know, I guess if we were just having an audit, I would probably be recommending Raymond Robson because I think the extra time is probably in the samples that they're pulling. They're pulling more samples.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with Abraham and Stevens, Kernovic, and Tucker doing accounting services, I feel comfortable with Gaybridge doing the audit. The audit really audits are really your kind of stopgap measure. They find less than 1% of issues. I think it's important to put our resources with the accounting services with Stevens, Kernovic, and Tucker. And I will never pronounce his last name correctly.
It was to say Stephen K.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess I as well, we could all agree on this mm-hmm. Recommendation for sure.
I guess I would make a motion then if you're looking for one to move to approve East Bay Charter Township enter an agreement with Gaybridge and Company to conduct an audit service for 2017 and 18 fiscal years with the ability to extend the agreement annually for two additional years. the 2019 and 2020 fiscal year into contract for reoccurring accounting service with Stephen
Kernovic
and Tucker based upon fee submitted in an August 2nd, 2017 proposal for accounting service and authorized township legal agent to sign letters of engagement for both these firms and services.
Second.
Okay, there is a motion and support, and I'm not going to repeat that motion. But all of those in favor, well, I tell you what, we'll just do a roll call vote, Ann.
Lyle?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Enchel?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Forte?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. Okay, thank you. We will get moving on that and be in contact with them. We'll move on to the Easttown PUD continuance, and Rick Brown, our township planner here, is here to walk us through that request. Go ahead, Rick.
Yes, back in 2008, the township board approved the Easttown planned unit development. It was a plan prepared by Mansfield & Associates for William and Tony Klaus. That was approved, like I said, a number of years ago. It had the original approval had it for 7 years, partially because of the economy. And then they were allowed up to three extensions of the PUD. This would be the third and final of the extensions. The PUD is on the west side of Three Mile Road between Hammond and South Airport Roads. And as you are probably mostly familiar, it involves, you know, several assisted living and or extended care facilities for seniors. The applicant provided a request for an extension on September 7th. They stated the reasons in that email, which you have a copy of. But they are working with the township to get a pilot ordinance adopted so that they can take the proposal in April to the state, MISHTA, for funding. They've had two meetings with the pilot subcommittee. And they have some paperwork they need to get back to us once this is all taken care of, and the pilot subcommittee review that and determine whether they would approve or not, and then bring it to the full board for final approval. So because of that time frame and the need to have the extension now, that's why they're requesting the extension. But this would be the final extension that's possible under the code for the PUD.
Okay, thank you. Do we have representation here from
Bill Eddington's here, I believe.
Bill, is there anything you'd like to add to that? And if you would to come up to the podium, if you'd introduce yourself, that'd be terrific.
Bill Eddington, CFO for Bill Klaus Related Companies. Rick already went through everything with you. We've already submitted an application to MISHTA. It's a long process. The next funding round is April, so we're hoping to have an approval in April. And then probably start construction 4 to 6 months after that.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Okay, we'll turn this back over to the board. Any questions and clarifications for Rick or Bill, or just general discussion?
Yeah. Rick, you said on September 7th that they submitted their application for an extension?
Yes.
Did it go in front of the plant?
Yes, the Planning Commission last week recommended that it be extended the final year. They voted 6-0.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to include that.
I was reading at 637-12 in your zoning. Under 12B, I guess it is, it said an application for extension of a special land use permit authorizing a planned unit development must be filed at least 60 days prior to the expiration of the original special land use permit authorizing a planned unit development or the expiration of any extension previously. Am I missing something, or was this not filed in a timely manner?
I would have to go back and check the dates of the original. See, it was in October of 2008. I know that the 60-day time frame did not get applied last year when they got their previous extension. I guess it's up to the board if they feel that this wasn't sufficient.
Okay. Did the Planning Commission, did they have the information that it was not within the 60-day period when they voted on it?
it was not brought up with them. No.
Okay. I guess my suggestion would be, and I'll make a motion after everybody gets done, that we send it to the Planning Commission. Let them realize that it is past the expiration date and decide what they want to do, because it said it must be filed. Or maybe they want to change the ordinance. That's a possibility, but I think that...
That would take several months to change the ordinance.
Well, but yeah. I'm just saying, though, that they voted on something that apparently they didn't realize. And I just happened to run across it today when I was looking at it.
In the zoning ordinance?
Huh?
In the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
Did the Planning Commission, you all have copies of the zoning ordinance? So they have the information.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Rick, what you were making the point that this is the third request.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if any of them were done 60 days prior, to be honest with you. The first one 2 years ago was just before I started here. I would have to go back and look at the timetable on that one. Last year's, I'm pretty sure, was not 2 months ahead of time. If that's the case, then that was, something that has not been caught for the last several years. And so I would have to go back and look and do a little research on that, because I don't have the full file here in front of me.
Okay. Other discussion? From board members, is there any other questions, clarifications, discussion, or motion?
Well, the only question that I had, and I believe Mr. Eddington, is that right, Eddington, stated that, is back when we originally approved this back in 2008, we were told that the reason for the extension of everything was that it took 7 years to go through the MSHDA process. Mr. Eddington made the statement that the application has been filed, but the email that was received says we are in the process of filling our application with MSHDA and hope to have an approval for our project no later than spring of 2018. So is it going to take 7 years after this application has been received? What are we looking at? I thought that's why we gave such a long extension back in 2008, was so that it could wind its way through the MSHDA process. What part am I missing?
That was one of the rationales, yes. It was the economy and going through the MSHDA process, yes. And
when it was originally done, the economy was not a factor. The economy happened after they came before us, and the discussion was that MSHDA was a very long process, and that's why they wanted the original extension for 7 years.
Bill, could you come up and address the timing that you're looking at, and again, where you're at in the process, and kind of take us through the timeline from the beginning
and
to
the
end?
And if you can do me a favor, move the microphone. You're not under tall like I am, so they're perfect. Thank you.
The MSHDA process is long, but it doesn't take 7 years. In a normal case, it probably takes you about a year and a half. We have submitted an application already, and they've come back to us requesting some additional information. So, as we said, the next funding round is April. We're hoping to have an approval in April. After the approval, it'll probably take another 3, 4, 5 months to get contracts and stuff in place to start construction. So probably roughly about a year from now, we'd ideally begin construction.
Thank you.
Question maybe for Leslie. They have to start construction within a year of the extension, correct? So that means shovel in the ground construction? Okay, that's what I thought. So the construction has to begin before October of next year.
Oh yes, definitely.
Well, I'm getting conflicts.
Yeah. They actually have to apply for a land use permit, and after they apply for that, they have a year to begin.
So after this extension, then they apply for a land use permit, and from the approval of the land use permit, they have a year to start construction.
Yes.
So 2 years from
yes.
approval of this. Okay.
So where would that put us? I guess I'm going to ask Brian. We're paying for our legal services to be here. Can you brief us on if we move forward with this today and the shovel in the ground doesn't happen for 2 years, but it was only a one-year extension, where are we at?
Now, Brian is here tonight for the short-term rentals.
Okay.
Well, I can't address that without reviewing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
That's okay. I like to put attorneys on the spot all the time.
I'll let you do it next time. I've done my one. So I guess that's still a valid concern to me. But
okay. Other discussion from board members? Rick, do you have any recommendations?
In light of this, not having been given any chance to look it up today, I guess... if Glenn wants to postpone or if the board wants to postpone this so that the Planning Commission can take a look at that, that's perfectly fine. I would have to go back and do some research on 2015 and 2016 and see exactly when the application date was compared to the timeline of when it was approved. I don't know those dates right off the top of my head.
So in light of this, again, a lot of the Planning Commission and the board members were very similar, the boards in composure with both of the extensions. What would this do to the extension as far as that year clock ticking in?
What would it do what?
What if you were to, if this were to go back to the Planning Commission, would this negate their ability to get that year extension?
Going back to them, no, I guess it would toll, that's more of a legal question, but I would say it would toll the time temporarily, and then if the Planning Commission or board find that it didn't meet the code requirement, then they failed to have the application in time and it would expire and they'd have to start over the process.
Okay. Now, Brian, I realize you hadn't realized this issue, but does that seem to make...
If someone misses a time deadline, then obviously you cannot move forward and grant the relief requested. That's lots of case law in the context of judicial cases.
Okay. All right, so is there a motion?
I would make a motion to send it back, to deny it, send it back to the Planning Commission, have them look it over, and... Again, I'm not opposed to the extension. What I'm opposed to is what the ordinance says, and if we voted for this, we'd be violating our own ordinance.
I mean, like we did a year ago?
Mm-hmm.
Like we did a year ago?
Yep.
I don't know if you necessarily are denying it at this point.
That's what I was going to say. Could we leave out, could you
Can we just refer it back to the Planning Commission?
Correct. Because I think if you deny it, you start a different time, you have
you
a different
it.
Date.
When you deny it, it's over.
Then when it's in discussion and you're looking for information, that's
okay.
a different thing.
That's fine.
Okay, so you would refer it back. Is your motion to refer it back to the
yes.
Planning Commission?
Yes, that's what you want. That's what we can
I will
do.
Second that.
Okay.
Motion has been made to refer the Easttown PUD one-year extension back to the Planning Commission for clarification and recommendation. Have been made and supported. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed by no?
No.
Okay. Let the record show that Bartlett voted no, and we'll move forward to the next agenda item. Thank you. Brookside Deferment and Developers Agreement. So you have kind of a lengthy cover sheet on this where I've kind of tried to explain the process of this. We have with us tonight, we have Justin Mortier, who is the applicant. Justin, you might want to make your way up to the front here. And we have Scott Howard, who is here as counsel. Again, going back to the cover, you have the information that Justin had approached the township, specifically the Office of Planning and Zoning, and myself about the REU adjustments that have happened in Garfield Township and in Acme Township, and requested that the township look at something similar. Well, at the same time, staff and I were meeting with developers and engineers to kind of go over the advantages and the impediments to developing in the township and see what recommendations they had. Clearly, Mr. Mortier's request could have been one of those comments. So it was a little bit of a jump start, but trying to meet his timeline, agreed to bring this proposal to the township. And what it really does is it seeks to do two things. One is it to implement a deferral for Justin Mortier's project so that he can pay the water and sewer benefits over time. And the other is to look at if there are any ordinance changes specific that would impact financially the benefit fees of his agreement during that time, that they would be honored retroactively. So that's kind of my brief synopsis. I'm going to let Justin make a comment and then Scott Howard as well. We have a couple things to consider with this as far as, you know, ordinances, time frames, all that kind of good stuff. Justin, would you stand up and introduce yourself, and if there's anything you want to add or clarify?
Thank you. Again, my name is Justin Mortier. Businesses in East Bay Township, as well as my residents. Again, we look at this as a partnership. I also work with Leslie and Rick and Beth on the East Bay corridor planning. So again, this is looked at as a partnership. So we're looking for some collaboration on helping to develop East Bay. As a developer, we find it more financially desirable in other townships and within the city. But our desire is to continue to see this area grow and develop and create a stronger tax base for you folks. So what we're looking for is simply a vehicle to allow us a retroactive consideration should a change be made into the PUDs as the committee is looking to that in that direction. So that's the vehicle that we're trying to use is the deferral process. So we were sitting on the sideline waiting to jump into the game, waiting to get a land use permit. We want to make sure that we have this in place before we pull a permit, and so that's, I guess, more of the backstory of the long version, if you will.
So. Thank you, Justin.
Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. I think that's pretty accurate. Except I think we're getting terminology mixed up from the previous PUD. You're talking REUs.
I did. I was paying attention, though.
Yeah, there you go. Scott, could you come up and address kind of how you've become involved in this project? Or application, rather.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Supervisor. I normally work with East Bay Township through the Department of Public Works and the Board of Public Works, and Beth approached me because I know that Brian and his firm had some time constraints, so we wanted to get a draft proposed deferral agreement in front of you for consideration at the developer's request. There's a couple of important points for you to understand about this deferral agreement. Number one is, at the developer's request, it is drafted as a 15-year deferral. It is important for you to understand that the most recent resolution that East Bay Township has on file is Resolution 2014-5, which allows for a 5-year deferral at 3% interest rate. So it's different than what is proposed by the developer in the deferral agreement. And if you want to agree to the 15-year term that is proposed in the agreement, you would also need to amend your resolution or your ordinance to allow for that extended period of time. So there would be an extra step if you're going to grant the developer full relief. So I just want everybody to understand that. Secondly, and I think maybe this is most important to the developer, we have built in the requested provision that says if East Bay Township, as it's going through this process of considering its benefits, changes the amount of residential equivalents that are required for the apartment building for sewer and water, then those changes would be applied retroactively. And that's in paragraph 2 of the draft agreement. So that's, I guess, an important consideration for you to make. The last item that I would say is a sort of a big picture one, and that is as you move forward, it's time for you to revisit your water and sewer ordinances, and I strongly recommend that you look to sort of cleaning those up, amend and restate them so that they are clear. You don't have to go through multiple amendments or ordinance resolutions to figure out where you are at. You start sort of fresh with developers and residents of the township in 2017 with a clearly articulated ordinance, and then you can go forward with that. So it's time to do that. That's more of a side commentary as we went through this process and drafting the deferral agreement, but I'd strongly recommend that you work with your township attorneys and your supervisor to get a draft proposal for you. So happy to answer any questions on the deferral agreement itself, though. But like I said, if you are going to agree to the 15-year term, you would have an additional step of amending your resolution or your ordinance to accommodate that.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. We'll open this up to the board. Or any questions for clarifications?
I got a question on the term on benefits, the 15-year term. And I don't know which attorney can answer this, but my concern is if we agree to any extended time, even if it's 5-year time, and I don't know why I never thought about it before, if somebody gets the benefits, they hook up, and let's say they go bankrupt, does those benefits have to already be tied to the tax notice in order for us to collect or not? In other words, there are some things that when people file bankruptcy, they file it, let's just say it was on the benefits. The benefits weren't tied to the tax bill. Is the township able to collect or no?
So that's a great question, and it's an important one, because if the developer disappears, you still need to make sure that those benefits are passed on. And so the way that you would do that is you would put that on as it becomes an encumbrance on the property. And what we want to do is make sure that that is recorded so that whomever buys the property, whether it's out of bankruptcy or just buys it in general, understands that they have a continuing obligation to pay those benefits. So we don't have to put it on the tax roll because it's not a delinquent payment, but it would be a document that is the agreement would be recorded such that any subsequent purchaser would understand that there is an encumbrance on the property and that needs to be paid before it's developed.
Okay.
We get there just a little bit different way than a tax rule.
Okay. Well, my concern was that I know, and the economy is going great now. It was going great until it bottomed out before, but I never thought too much about it, and then I realized that once somebody files bankruptcy on something, if you don't have a legal way to tie to it, you're like everybody else that's on there, and I just want to make sure if we're going to do this that the township is protected regardless of what happens.
And I say this with an absolute qualification that I'm not a bankruptcy attorney. However, certain municipal charges do survive bankruptcy. So you're safe in terms of a bankruptcy. But what you also want to do is make sure that the subsequent purchaser or owner of the property understands that there is this bill out there that they have to satisfy before they can develop. So it's kind of a no surprises policy.
Okay.
Scott, paragraph 5, number 5, as I'm reading it, it's if it goes delinquent, it goes on the tax roll, and it doesn't, isn't a lien on the property. Am I reading that incorrectly?
No, that is correct if they fail to make their payments. So in other words, you could have a scenario where the property transfer. You could have two scenarios. One is they stop paying and it's defaulted and then it gets put on the tax roll as a delinquent obligation. Or two, you could have a scenario under which there's a payment out there that's due under this property, but they're up to date in other, they're current, and you just want to make sure that somebody, the subsequent purchaser, understands that there's a, still this obligation out there before they buy the property.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Okay. I'm not sure if my question is something that's got answers or maybe it's a board question. If the board chooses to allow the retroactive, where does that put us with other developers that have come before us? Where is that line drawn? And are they all looked at equally, or are we, do we look at them one by one? I appreciate what you've brought forward for us, Justin, but what does that do in terms of our other developed units? And
so one of the reasons, if I could just go a little bit into this, that that we're not just bringing you a suggestion to change the REUs just like Garfield and Acme did, is because we haven't finished an analysis of it. We're just beginning an analysis of it. When you change your REUs for water and sewer, the thing is, and what Garfield and Acme did for clarification is, instead of an apartment being one REU just like a home, they are 0.5, so they're a half of a benefit for apartments. Now, you have to do that based on some science of how much water usage, and Garfield did that. Acme cited Garfield's to do that. But the thing that we want to analyze is, because the way that we charge user rates, water is metered, so you're going based on how much you use. But sewer, the fees that we collect are based on the REUs. So if we change an REU, we actually change the amount that we collect in for sewer user rates with existing customers. So we want to analyze that to see if that's a marginal change or if it's significant to the sewer budget. So, but that may very well be something that we look at and say, you know, it makes a lot of sense from science. It doesn't largely impact us financially. It's just a marginal effect, and it helps development within the township. So we may recommend that, but we're not at that point yet to doing that.
Right.
So what this allows is, you know, Justin, who is sitting there, it allows him to take advantage, to utilize that change if we make it. Now, what's different from him as far as our other developers out there wanting to use that? Well, ones that have pulled permits and are already, you know, down the road of developing, no. He has not pulled a land use permit yet. So to me, that's the distinction that I understand. And then, of course, you do have a point, though, with other developers who are looking down the pike, and they say, do I pull the trigger now, or do I wait for later when there's, you know, a recommendation? They may indeed ask for something, right, something similar. I think what's interesting about the proposal is, it doesn't tie us. If we don't change the REUs, it doesn't change what his financial obligation is. Right. So the developer is able to have some comfort level that in this month he's not going to pay X number of dollars, where if he would have waited, you know, 1 month and a recommendation that's coming down the pike, that his financial obligation would be significantly less.
So it's not necessarily a virtual line in the sand, but it's saying this is where we are now moving forward. That is something a developer may wish to bring before the board.
I would think so. Does that sound correct? Or?
That's correct. I would expect that you may have other similar requests if you approve this one. And I think that is, I like to make the distinction between legal and policy decisions, and I think that's an important policy decision for this board to consider. Do you want to do this? And I don't want to say set the precedent, but set the example that other folks may follow later on and may make that same request or not. And that's the policy part that you need to decide tonight.
And you may very well indeed end up, you know, a developer has to make, in my opinion, the choice to develop based on the full financial picture, not the possibility of the change, because, you know, you may not end up making that change. So go ahead. Did you have something?
Thank you.
I got a question, I guess, for Jason. You've looked at these figures, I know, and I just want to make sure I'm looking at it right. At 15 years, you're going to be financing the $280,800, is that correct, for 15 years?
That sounds right, yes.
Okay, and so you would be paying, if I'm my math is right, about $1,560 a year. Does that sound right?
No.
Or would that be a month, I guess, wouldn't it? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
The reason, as a developer, the reason for the 15 years versus the 5 years, the amount of money that we would, the project does not cash flow in that type of a limited time frame. So the reality of developing, I'm not sure which term to even use, but housing that is affordable for the workforce, it is such a narrow line and such a narrow margin that it's becoming a major challenge. And so this is a way for us to look at the project when we will have additional cash flow coming in over that span of time of 15 years. The five-year plan is not something that a developer would see as a benefit, because we can't, as a developer, there's not $100,000 in cash flow coming in the first 12 months, and then the next 12 months, and the next 12 months. So that's the reality of those numbers.
What you're looking for is positive cash flow from the get-go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, these are the type of comments that we're getting from getting feedback from developers. You know, what are the blocks to development? And that is one. I mean, obviously, you see this is what, you know, $350,000 or is that about right? Yeah. In benefit fees. And that is, you know, if you don't do a deferment, that is due right off the bat. So that can be tough for the developer.
And I know we're not talking about the actual change of the benefit fees right now, but just to, I guess, preface the discussions that we'll probably have in the coming weeks or months, you know, if you look at the percentages of that cost for a development like what we're doing compared with a residential home, I mean, residential homes right now are $400,000 to just pick a number in this area. That benefit fee of $8,400 is 2% of that cost. The project that we're looking at is $100,000 per unit for a two-bedroom, $120,000. So now it's a 7 or 8% piece of that puzzle, which when you look at banking and a financial lender, they don't look at that as an asset. That's very difficult for a developer to quantify as part of the project. So those are some of the discussions that we have to walk through to try to get these things done.
Can I ask a couple questions? How many units are in Brookside? The new proposed one, yeah.
There'll be 44 units and one fitness room, so there essentially is 45 individual spaces.
Okay. And can you tell me if the first phase of Brookside and Fern, I can't remember the name of it.
Fern Creek?
Yes, thank you. Those are like 4 years old. At least one of them is at least 4 years old. Are they cash flowing right now?
No, not yet.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Mindy.
I have questions for Scott or for the board. I'm not sure who. Maybe it's for Brian. In number two of the agreement, I see that this is a retroactive payment to the developer if the township changes their REUs, but I don't see it as a deadline of there's an end of when they have to go back. So if it's 100 years in the future and you change the REUs, you know, it still has to be paid within 60 days. I think that, am I reading that right? There's no end?
We did not put an end to, obviously, once the the entire IRU balance would be paid, it would end. But there was not, we specifically did not put an end date in, but that's an important point for the board to discuss. Do you want to say...
within the 2 years or something?
Certain, you could also say there will be, you know, whatever payments you make, and there will be no refunds. That's an option that the board has. We drafted it as requested by the developer, so that was the terms they asked for, and those are the terms that we put in. But that's an important point, and thank you for bringing that up.
And then the other question I have is that, say in 6 months we change, and I'm going to say the acronym wrong, REUs. Mm-hmm. It says that we have to pay the overpayment within 60 days, but they still have a balance. So I'm thinking that that overpayment should go to the forward, not be back to the developer.
They would have a total amount. There would be a total amount that they would have to pay. So, yes, there would be a – if the only time that there would be a payback scenario is whatever, you're past the halfway point, or, you know, they've paid enough such that they've paid more than what – would be due under the agreement with the new REU shift.
It would be completely recalculated under the new REU table.
Oh, it does say it has paid more. Okay, never mind. I got that one. Okay. All right. So the only thing that I think that needs to be in here is we need to have an end date, or say that, you know, the end of the agreement is the end of this REUs, or maybe say that if we don't change the REUs within the first 2 years or 3 years of the agreement, that, you know, it's not eligible anymore. Just a thought for my fellow board members.
Yep, I would agree that we need to have some specific period of time. You know, if it were something, if the deferment were 5 years, I think you could almost tie it to the deferment. I think tying the change of REUs to 15 years is a little extensive. Mm-hmm. So it just depends where the township board's comfort is with these things as far as timing and, you know, on the issue, on how they want to proceed.
I guess my thought is, and, you know, I don't probably really have a problem on the 15-year, providing that a policy is written to cover that so anybody else comes in. But I guess to even have in here about the reducing the cost of benefits tie into that, I would like to have this two separate votes, if that's what the board chooses, but rather than one motion.
And tied together.
I don't understand.
So he's basically the two options, the two issues that we're considering is the deferment, and in that is the length of the deferment, obviously. Is there a deferment, and if so, what's the period of time? And then the second issue is, if we change the REU table, will the developer be able to avail himself of the new REU table, and for what period of time? So, Scott, how would you suggest that we're able to break that up into two motions, and if it's one agreement?
Sure, there would be. The way I would suggest you do that is, if you would like to be able to defer for 15 years, the logical way to do that is make a motion to amend the resolution and or ordinance to allow for a deferment period of up to 15 years. And that would be your first motion and your first action. And then second action would be to propose to enter into a deferral agreement with the developer that allows for the 15 years and address that second component. So you're going to do two steps, one of which is to decide whether or not, as a matter of policy, you want to allow, as a board, you're going to allow for up to 15 years deferment. And if you do agree with that, then are you going to allow this developer the ability to do that? And what constraints do you want to put on sort of the retroactive component of this?
Okay.
And maybe I can work with you to make sure that we've got appropriate motion language if somebody wants to make those motions.
Okay. Can I just ask Rick and Leslie really quick, from staff's perspective, do you have, and you don't have to, if you say, I really don't have anything to add to this, that's fine, but, you know, having firsthand witnessed developers, projects, different, you know, cycles in the economy. Do you have any feedback on this proposal or request?
Not really. I haven't had a chance to fully review it other than reading what you had provided me before, but I haven't seen the full package. So
Okay.
Defer.
Okay. Thank you.
For the 25 years that I've been here, the biggest thing for not getting a lot of development, and it's gone down, we've lost development every year since I've been here, is because of our sewer and water benefits. So I really think we need to look at that, and we also need to look at amending Ordinance 109.
Okay. All right. And those are some of the topics that obviously we are specifically talking about from the developers and working on those. Okay. From a board's perspective, how do you want to build some consensus or a motion on this? What is the board comfortable with? I mean, I think we could take it one issue at a time. First of all, do you want to do a deferment, yes or no? Is a deferment reasonable? And if so, if it's not, then let's state that it's not. And if it is, what time frame is the board comfortable with?
The last deferment that we did was the Headwaters project. That was 5 years. There was no discussion about REUs at that point. It was just this straight deferment. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they paid it off in less than their 5 years or not. But
I don't know, because that goes through DPW.
Right.
So I don't know
that. But you know, they brought that forward to us with their different phases, and it was logical at the time to approve it. The 15 years I'm struggling with, I think that it was a good practice to do with the Headwaters one, the 5 years. I may go somewhere in the middle. I'm on the fence right now for 15.
When did they do the Headwaters?
That was in 2014. That's that resolution that you have.
Okay.
I just have a couple of questions. Sorry. The 10-year Treasury bill that we tied this to, is that the applicant or Justin's request? Did you tie it to the 10-year Treasury note, or was that something that
Actually, I think that was through another similar document through the DPW.
Okay, because I mean, it ends up being very close to what we had passed in 2014, but I just didn't know if there was a reason why we changed it.
I think this allows for fluctuation.
Right, but once we lock into this rate, does it change during the term? Or are you locking into the 10-year Treasury on October 9th?
Scott, how would you read how it's worded? I mean, I guess I thought it was annually.
It is
okay. Annually? Okay.
It's
thank
annually
you.
Adjusted.
Sorry, that's probably in here, isn't it? And then is there something that if we do, and maybe this can't even be addressed here, if we do reduce the REUs, and they are able to take advantage of that because it's within whatever time frame we set, then does that change the length of the financial agreement?
It doesn't have to. I mean, I think.
Or can it? I mean, either way, I'm asking. Because if we grant 15 years and we change the REUs within a year from now, then we're giving them 15 years to pay $140,000.
Right.
And I think that changes the picture, or at least it does for me.
Okay. Anyway. I mean, I think there are two different, we can have two different time frames. Go ahead, Scott.
It is certainly possible to do that. It'll make the agreement a little bit more complicated.
Very cumbersome. I know. That's why I'm like, I don't know.
But it's certainly possible to draft it that way so that you would say, if we're, you know, under this provision, if you're going to reduce the REU benefit charges, depending on how much you reduce them, the payment period
could reduce the term that much.
tried to use the sort of KISS principle.
I know. I'm sorry, but I'm struggling.
On the original draft, that's not to say that that is wrong to do it that way.
No.
I totally understand that, but we're just, for first draft, I didn't want to make it overly complicated.
No, I agree. And I'm struggling with 15 years. Rough calculations, just rent income to 44 units in 1 year is $600,000, I think. So I'm struggling with 15 years when we've already approved previously 5 years. Not to say that that isn't viable, but I just struggle with it.
Are most of you acceptable to a deferment?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to do a deferment. Are you all acceptable to a 5-year deferment under the current resolution?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How many of you would consider going to a 10-year?
I would consider 10.
I might do a 10 if we can reconfigure if we change the REUs.
How many of you are uncomfortable with the 15-year?
I am
uncomfortable.
Okay. It seems to me we have some consensus of a deferment at 10 years. And I see a developer let me ask the board on the second question. As far as changing REUs, are you comfortable crafting a document that says, if we change REUs, that they will be retroactive?
No.
Not tonight.
When we start talking about changing or lowering the number of REUs, which technically you're talking about taking in less money when you sell an REU.
Right.
I look at what we took in so far this year toward for water benefits, and I think it's like $41,000 or something. Our payment on that water tower project is, what, $160,000 a year? The benefits are to pay for the infrastructure. That's what benefits are for. I hear them talking about water usage. Well, I use less water. You're exactly right, but it's all the way across the board. When these figures were set up for how much water we use, a toilet used 3 gallons to flush it. Now we're down to, I think, 1.6 gallons to a flush. So you've almost cut the water on the toilet in half, and there's water savers on everything according to code anymore, your shower heads and everything. So rather than, if we're going to pass this off, I would rather see us pass it off on everybody, not just the apartments, because I think everybody technically uses less water than they did when that benefit package was put out there. So that's where I'm coming from. But my concern is that we have taken enough money off benefits every year to make our bond payments, if we're being fiscally responsible.
So you're saying you're not interested in considering the developer availing himself of a future change in REUs at this point. Okay, how does the rest of the board feel about that part of the proposal?
I agree with Glenn.
Okay. All right.
I guess I don't have a problem of putting a time frame. I don't know that 10 years is good. 1 or 2, maybe 3, but I can't go the full term of the deferment.
Okay.
That's just kind of open checkbook kind of thing.
Well, and what if we decide to expand our infrastructure based on what is coming in, and then we change that, and we're in the middle of the project. So we're on the hook for this, yet we're seeing a reduction in the income coming in. That's not going to bode well to the water users that are going to see the increase in their bills.
Yeah.
Although the one thing I'll say is, when you're taking a look at doing projects, the type of analysis that we're doing right now with the developers would predate that. I mean, we're looking at doing that offering those recommendations within probably the next 6 months. definitely within the next year. If there are any recommendations, mm-hmm. we might come to the end of the process and go, it's pretty swell.
I guess I'd like to see more analysis.
Sure. And that's kind of what I think when I listen to Glenn is I think that any change in the REUs, and that's why this hasn't, as a policy, hasn't been rushed to you, because any potential change in REUs needs to have some analysis behind mm-hmm. it, and how will that impact us, and is the science behind it as well. Justin?
If I can chime in.
Sure.
Again, we're not looking for an approval or making a recommendation. All we want is an opportunity to have that be retroactive should a change be made. That's all we're asking.
Okay.
That's all.
Thank you. So I hear that definitely I do not hear a comfort level with the board at doing any type of an REU retroactive change at the same term as a deferment, but potentially at, say, within 2 years or within a year's time. Okay, so let's start taking this by motion so we can get going. We have a lot of people here who are here for short-term rentals.
Do we have to amend for 10 years as well?
That's correct.
Okay.
So I would recommend your first motion be to authorize staff to draft the amendment to extend the deferral time period to 10 years for sewer and water benefits. And if you wanted to change the percentage amount, we need to do that as well. Sorry, the interest rate.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it would be the motion would be to authorize staff to prepare a 10-year deferral amendment, as well as a change in the interest rate to
at an interest rate tied to the treasury.
And to allow
1% above the treasury.
We also want to allow the developer to utilize the change in that policy, because I'm assuming he's going to want to get going before that comes back to us.
You would authorize the enter into, yes, that we'll deal with the agreement in the second step or maybe the third step. How's that?
Okay.
So let's get the authorization to change to 10 years
okay.
and 1% above the Treasury T-note bill.
Okay.
Number.
Let's just see where the board has comfort level with a motion. Does anybody want to make a motion, or should I just?
I think I can get it.
Okay. Go ahead, Mindy.
I make a motion to authorize staff to prepare a 10-year deferral agreement tied to the T-note Treasury bill plus 1%.
Support.
A deferral agreement or the resolution?
Resolution.
I'm sorry, I just...
That's correct.
Because I think
right,
that's
Scott?
What we're doing.
That's yeah. correct. Okay. And is there support for that?
Yes.
Okay, the motion has been made and supported. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed by no? Okay, that motion passes. So let's take our second step, Scott.
So your second step would be whether or not you want to allow the developer to benefit from any retroactive change in the REU benefit chart.
Okay. Does anybody want to make a motion regarding that?
I would make a motion that we deny that.
Okay. Is there support? Okay, hearing no support, is there another motion? Okay, I will make a motion did you have terminology for that, or are we doing it within the draft agreement?
I would actually suggest that you make it part of your amendment to the resolution.
Okay.
So that both this developer and anybody else coming forward can benefit from that retroactivity. They can request that retroactivity, unless you want to make it specific to this particular developer.
I'm a little uncomfortable with attaching it to the resolution and the ordinance, which will be there for an extended period of time, and then in 10 years they're figuring out what we did again with this. I personally would rather it be for this developer, and any other developer coming forward can submit the same application. And I'm assuming that we would grant that as well, until the point which we decide that there aren't any, we're not going to change the REUs for this, and that we wouldn't recommend the applicant applying for that.
In that case, Madam Supervisor, I'd recommend that your motion be that you authorize staff to include in the deferral agreement a retroactivity clause for any change in the REU table.
Okay.
And that retroactivity clause would last for a period of X years.
Okay. So I move that we have written into a deferral agreement with Brookside an REU clause for retroactive, any changes made within the next 2 years to be retroactive to the Brookside development.
I'm sorry, that was for 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
I'd support that.
Okay, that motion has been made and supported. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. So there are five in favor and two opposed. Let's do a roll call vote on that because I thought I heard
Bartlett.
A little different.
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Lyle?
No.
Walters?
No.
Cortade?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Brent?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. I have my direction, and we'll provide that. I'll provide that draft to you.
Okay. So we have no third steps, and we're good to go. And we'll be bringing those changes back to the board. And you're set with your resolution there, or conclusion of this topic, right? Okay. We're good. Thank you. Thank you for the public's patience on this. We will move forward to the public hearing on short-term rental ordinance. Rick, Township Planner, if you could give us a recap of that, and then we'll move into the public hearing.
Sure. Thank you. For more than a year, probably close to 15 months, the Township has been discussing the issue of short-term rentals at the Planning Commission Board or jointly. Following the input that has been received at a number of formal hearings and informal hearings, staff prepared, along with the township attorney's help, great deal of help, by the way, a draft ordinance that was recommended for approval by the Planning Commission at their July 11th meeting. They held formal public hearings on April 4th and July 11th, aside from the other many meetings that have been held regarding this topic. Basically, what was adopted on July 11th was a draft police power standalone ordinance for short-term rentals entitled the Short-Term Rental Licensing. Also adopted was recommended for adoption was a short-term rental application and a zoning amendment number 5-17, which references the standalone short-term rental ordinance from the zoning code section 209. Like I mentioned, these documents culminated from a number of meetings where we had a great deal of input from the public, from staff, from planning commissioners, from the attorneys, across the board. It was a very open and deliberative process. The items that were included in the short-term rental ordinance include the required licensing of all short-term rentals. It includes they being allowed in all residential locations in all zoning districts. Now, except for there is a specific provision that they cannot be allowed in platted subdivisions and condominiums where the subdivision bylaws and or the condominium bylaws prohibit such activities. They require compliance with state and federal laws, including taxation. The state just recently, on July 1st, adopted new tax laws applying to short-term rentals, which Airbnb and other organizations are participating in. It requires an annual cleaning/maintenance schedule be required for holding tanks, while also additional requirements are now required for septic tanks, smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, etc. All those from a perspective of a public health, safety, and welfare viewpoint, that we want to keep our waters clean, we want to keep our public safe, we want to keep our visitors safe, and while also enjoying our fine community we have here. And then it provide a process for resolving violations that's presented in there, as well as time stipulations for getting those violations resolved. And to prevent fictitious or arbitrary complaints. We included a segment in there where someone making false violation claims can actually be charged with, you know, violating the ordinance as well. So we're trying to keep track of or trying to keep down fictitious and false claims just because somebody doesn't like having a rental next to them. Since the hearing and since the recommendation from the Planning Commission, there have been several things that have come up that have been primary concerns, I guess, for lack of a better word, since the recommendation. The first one is the minimum length of stay. The current document does not have a minimum length of stay. So technically, it could change over nightly or every other night. That has been a common concern among residents, and staff is comfortable with the board considering a minimum, an agreed-to minimum, perhaps 3 days. We've had a lot of people come to the meetings where they're okay with a 7-day minimum during the summer months, but in the spring and the fall when school's in session, sports are going on, and all those types of things, it's hard for a family to come and rent a place for 7 days. A 3-day rental to come see the fall colors or to come for the VASA or something like that is a better time frame. The second question that has come up is regarding the concern over the holding tank regulations and the septic field regulations. It has been stated by those who have short-term rentals that if this is a concern of the townships, it should be applied universally, not specifically towards them. There is merit in that argument. At the same time, with some of the ongoing and newly discovered concerns of Mitchell Creek and water quality there, this is an important issue for us to get our arms around, whether it be for Mitchell Creek, Spider Lake, Arbutus Lake, or East Bay itself. And the board should consider either applying, you know, some type of point of sale ordinance or something else that will address this issue because of the concerns over water quality. However, there are some instances where point of sale will only help you if a property turns over. So if there's a short-term rental and it's got holding tanks, they're going to need to have those cleaned out more often than just point of sale. It's going to need to be done probably at least once a year, probably multiple times a year. If someone has a septic field, it's going to need to have a regular cleaning as well, as does for anybody. My home, when I lived in Saline, we had a septic field, and we had it cleaned out every 2 to 3 years. So it's important to try to address that issue in some manner. The attempt in this ordinance was to try to make sure we have a grasp of those units that are, as determined by the courts, technically a commercial use, not a residential use, that they keep up on the holding tanks and the septic fields so that we don't have an environmental problem that develops. Lastly, staff has included a couple of other points that the board will need to consider when and if they adopt the short-term rental ordinance. One of them is the fees that will be charged, and we provided you a chart with 10 different communities, and they are all over the map, you know, on the fees. From, I don't know, $25 a year to $200 a year, depending on who you're talking about. And then also when it would go into effect. A number of short-term rental owners have regular customers that come year after year after year, and they're going to want to know as soon as possible if there's, quote-unquote, an impact on them. The document that is before you, primary impact they might have is getting licensed and then maybe a couple of upgrades to meet some of the standards, whether it be smoke detectors or carbon monoxide detectors or something like that. But still, folks want surety, and you know, and they want to have a definite timeline in their mind. Staff believes that, you know, a good time would be to have it going into effect at the start of a season versus right in the middle of a season, or perhaps at the end of a season, but not right smack in the middle of it, and that would be onerous and a difficult thing for somebody to do, especially if they've already got commitments from people. We also would want enough time where we can get up to speed with our paper processing and things like that, because the first 2 years will probably be very busy as people come on board. Once everything gets set and operating, I think it will slow down after that. But the first couple of years, especially the first year, is going to be quite busy as people apply for licenses. So you have copies of all these documents before you. Brian has been a godsend, helping put this together, answering questions, picking staff the right way, et cetera. And he's here also tonight to answer any questions. Leslie's here as well, as you know, and we'll try to answer any questions the board may have, or if the board wishes to direct any of the citizens might have.
Thank you, Rick. Brian, do you have anything before the public hearing portion?
Yeah, I guess I would like to address the board. I've gone through this process with multiple townships, and we've discussed short-term rental regulations. And what it boils down to fundamentally is a balancing of property interests. You are basically talking about a residential development or a residential neighborhood, if you will. And in that residential neighborhood, people buy based on the fact that they think it's going to be a residential neighborhood. You're not going to have loud parties at 3 o'clock in the morning. When someone has a short-term rental, there's often a nuisance factor. Okay, people are a party. People that are utilizing short-term rentals don't have the roots, if you will, in the neighborhood. But on the other hand, the property owners that actually own these rentals sometimes need the income to be able to maintain the economic taxes and all of the other ways to be able to maintain a family or property within the family. So there really is a balancing between those two interests. And so I recommended that the township look at a licensing ordinance for the regulations themselves, and not a zoning ordinance that has the regulations themselves, for one fundamental purpose. Under Michigan law, a licensing ordinance or a standalone police power ordinance does not recognize a nonconforming use status. So if someone has operated a short-term rental for many years, if you put the regulations in the zoning ordinance, then in fact they are grandfathered or have a nonconforming use status. When you regulate them under a licensing ordinance, everybody has to get licensed. You don't recognize the nonconforming use or grandfathering of older rentals. That puts everybody on the same regulatory requirements, okay? And so you're basically saying everybody's got to play by the same rules. You're not going to be exempt from new regulations because you've utilized it in the past, okay? So I thought that was more fundamentally fair. And so what you really have to look at is whether you want to proceed with the licensing. You theoretically have the legal option to put it into the zoning ordinance directly. I think that causes some legal issues trying to establish then who's nonconforming and who's not. Okay. Rick talked about the minimum amount of stay. I want to make sure the board understands if you want some kind of language that says you have to have a minimum stay, that doesn't necessarily mean that the renters have to stay for a 7-day period or a 5-day period. That only means that the owner of the rental would be eligible to rent, okay, that particular unit every 7 days. Okay, so if someone stays there a weekend, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to stay for 7 days. It just means that the next rental period would be 5 days after they leave, if you will. Okay, does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah, I can just.
Yeah. Okay. And so, just because you're talking about a minimum length of stay doesn't mean that you're mandating someone actually keeps their boots under a bed for 7 days, okay? So, other than that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Brian and Rick and Leslie just stepped out, but I want to first of all thank you all for tackling an issue that is difficult not only in our region, across the state, across the United States, and with Airbnb and some other websites. It's really across the world, really, that they're struggling
with this
issue.
I also want the board to understand that there are certain bills now pending in the legislature that basically have at least asserted that this is not something for local decisions, that they're amending the Zoning Enabling Act to declare that this is a residential use and that the state would then dictate those as allowable uses. Who knows whether that legislation will pass? I think MTA, when I saw the email from MTA this morning, they testified against the bill, but whether they go, whether those bills are enacted or not, that's another issue. If the board goes forward with these regulations and they in fact adopt some type of regulations from the state, we can always look at how that impacts the local regulations. But I don't recommend that you make a decision based on what theoretically could happen in Lansing, because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Before we go to the public hearing portion, Mindy, do you want to offer anything from a planning commissioner's perspective?
We've heard at the planning commission level and at the township board level when we had a meeting a few months ago, this is such a polarizing subject. There are people that are so for short-term rentals, and there are people that are so against short-term rentals. You know, and those that are for it are like, well, the bad eggs are the ones that are next to the people that are complaining. And I agree that there are people that follow the rules, and there are managers of properties that are doing a wonderful job. But I have also heard, you know, through many meetings that there are just some rude people out there, I'll say. And those rude people are causing difficulty for our residents as well. And then I've heard people say, okay, what about sex offenders? You know, they don't have to register where they're going if they're going for less than 7 days. And I've heard, you know, comments about, you know, the parking, and people are parking, you know, in the wrong yard, you know. And but then I see that, you know, one of my neighbors has a pontoon boat in their front yard and it's been there for 2 months, you know. So I see both sides of it, and we have worked and trying to find the best way to deal with this. And I will say that when we were going down the path of a zoning ordinance, and we got to the point where we thought we had something pretty good, and then we started talking about, okay, well, you know, what happens if we change this? And, okay, now we got people with 17 different versions. You know, our ordinance keeps changing, and which ordinance, you know, do we look at? And that's when the revelation, Brian coming in and said, you know, police power is the only way to do this. And so we changed from going with zoning ordinance to a police power ordinance. And the one thing that remains a big question in my mind is who determines when a deed restriction says you can't have a short-term rental in your neighborhood. You know, that's the biggest question I still have remaining. I think we've done a great job. I think we've listened to everybody. I think that this is a police power ordinance that nobody's going to be happy with, but it's a huge compromise, and I think we've worked really, really hard to get that compromise so that everybody's not completely unhappy, okay? There's levels there. You know, we had to find somewhere in the middle. So I appreciate the time and effort that everybody, the Planning Commission, Rick and Leslie, Brian, everybody has done to try to get us to this point, and I think we're really, really close.
Very good. Thank you very much. So we will go ahead and open the public hearing process. It is 8:01, and first I want to say that this public hearing is on the short-term rental proposed ordinance before the Township Board that was referred on from the Planning Commission. The rules for public hearing for speaking will be similar to those of public comment. We ask that you give your name and address, make a concise statement, keep it within 3 minutes, and move on to the next person. I would ask, if you are going to make a comment, don't be shy. When someone is standing up giving a comment, if you know you would like to make a comment, please make your way up and stand behind them so we can keep the process moving. Do we have a sign-in sheet over there?
There's a note.
We do have a sign-in sheet. If you could, either just before or just after you speak, put your name and address there. That will get noted in the minutes. As well, we did receive 3 letters, one from Nancy Gonzalez, one from Mark McKellar, and one from Renee Kaufman. The Township Board has these letters. I don't know if they wanted, if we do need to read them in, we'll read them in at the very end. But I don't know if that's, if we
don't believe any of them asked for it to be read in. They just voiced their opinions.
Okay. All right. So we'll go ahead and start with the public comment during the public hearing. Go ahead and make your way up. You don't need to be recognized. You can just come up and make a line, sir, if you'll just get behind him.
More questions.
Oh, quickly, yes?
If there's more questions, I don't have time.
Oh, okay. Well, even for during the public hearing, the board typically, just like public comment, will not respond to general issues. However, if there's a question or a point of clarification that we or staff can make, we'll do that. But the public should not expect a dialogue or one-on-one with respect to each individual comment. So just so you know what to expect. Come on up, sir. Thank you.
Jimmy Munn, 723 Munson. Lived at that residence on East Bay across from Shelley's for the past 35 years. I have a lot of investments in real estate, be it commercial, industrial, apartments. I'm just making a comment. I don't know how far along this has gone, but I hope it doesn't happen in our neighborhood. And the only reason I say that is I've experienced it. My next, and I realize they're good investments. They can be great investments, depending on the location. But what happens, or what I experienced with my next-door neighbor's property when the Palmateers passed away, their kids, before they sold it, rented it on a weekly basis, and it was the worst summer I've ever had in my life. Every week there was a new group there, and they were polite. Everyone was polite, but everyone wants a vacation, and I get that. And they work hard for that vacation. So they come up, and they want to have a good time. And maybe there's only 4 or 6 people staying in the 4-bedroom house or 3-bedroom house, but Uncle Bob and Aunt Millie come with all the kids and their kids, and you got a barbecue every night. I get that. I understand that, and that's what I do when I'm on vacation. And they've got a bonfire on the beach, and everybody's having a great time. I get that. I understand that. And usually everyone's under control, but occasionally we'll have those issues that you talk about. And even if you have someone to police it and you've got rules, let's face it, that's rules get broken all the time, especially when there's drinking. But I get that because, again, I'm no saint. But you get that all taken care of for that week, and guess what? The next week, here comes another group, and we're dealing with it again. And then when they're gone, here comes another group. So as an investment, would I invest in something like that? Oh, I'm not saying I wouldn't, but it would probably be in an area to where that's all there is, and there's no problem. I don't know how you'd sell your house unless you sold it to somebody else that was going to do that if they knew that the house next door was a vacation home on a weekly basis, daily basis for someone else, because they're never going to have any privacy. So I understand it as an investment. I get it. It can be really good to help pay your taxes, which can be extraordinarily high, to help make your mortgage payment. But I sure hope it never happens in my neighborhood again. I've got a place in Fort Lauderdale, big deal. The HOA with the 9 townhouses that we have clearly states that you can rent your place one time a year for one night, 1 week, 1 month, 1 year. That's it, because they've experienced this before. Everybody that shows up wants to have fun. I do too. I go on vacation, I want to have fun. But if you're dealing with it at 3 o'clock in the morning when they're still outside singing Kumbaya, you're like, oh my God. But they're there because they deserve to have a vacation. That's just my observation. It's a tough deal. It's a tough deal.
Okay. Thank you. Another person who'd like to give public comment. Again, during this, please, the next person, just come up right behind them so we don't have that period in between.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Pack. I live at 824 Webster Street, downtown Traverse City. I'm also the general manager of the Cherry Tree Inn and Suites. We took over Points North Beachfront Resort as well. My big issue with this, it's been hard. I've been going back and forth. I said right from the beginning, this is going to pit neighbor against neighbor. It's so difficult as a township level and as planners and everyone involved. It's very difficult. But I would like to ask the question of, if I'm a hotel operator, can I build a hotel in English Woods? I'd like to build a 20-room hotel in English Woods. That's what I like to do. Lights on all the time. Have guests come in and out, whether, you know, length of stay up to me. Would I be able to do that? I don't think I would. I think I'd get a lot of feedback back. And that's the trouble. When I bought my house in downtown Traverse City, I expect a neighborhood. I expect flowers changed out. I expect flags flown. I expect to see the neighbors, their kids to grow. I expect to see what happens in my neighborhood and grow up to that and have my kids grow up in that neighborhood too. I think when you do short-term rentals like this, I think you destroy your community. I don't think it's going to be shown in the next 5 to 10 years. Traverse City is going to get bigger. It's Acme is, I'm telling you right now, Acme is going to be the next boon, I think, just because of the corridor and the development they're doing. If their township can get in line, it will really, really grow. But you're not going to see it for many years. But you're going to start seeing people like in Charlevoix, one of my hotels in Charlevoix. And at the end of the season, now this is not short-term rentals, but they're dealing with the same issue. At the end of the season, all the flags are put away, all the flowers are put away, and the only people left there are my 20 employees, if that, during the wintertime, and the people who, you know, open up part-time during the wintertime. The CVB, it's depressing. It's sad to see that come to that town, because that town is gorgeous. But that's part of what that town is a vacation town. Traverse City's not that way. You know, we like to tell our guests we are a year-round town. We are a vibrant community, great people in this area that love their towns, take care, and get to live in vacation land 24/7. And I think by allowing these ordinances, short-term rentals, I think you'll ruin the community. I think you're gonna make it a vacation town and not a year-round residence anymore. I think it's really going to hurt it. I know it's, I guess that's to the nth degree, but that's what I worry about. Just as in my own home down on Webster Street. One thing, in addition to this, you're expecting your homeowners to be managers, hotel managers. And through this whole thing, I've never had any of the townships come and talk to the hotel managers. How do you run a hotel? Length of stay? We do that all day long. How do you deal with a guest who's bothering another guest through an adjoining door, or coming in late at night and banging in, or trying to find a parking spot, or having a beach fire? That's hotel management 101. That's how we do it. We deal with a registration card, face-to-face, employees 24/7. You know, I have 80 employees across the 3 hotels that I run, and it takes a lot of training, daily operations. I get about 4 hours of sleep on a good night. You're asking a lot of your residents in the area, and I know it's, like I said, it's very hard. You buy this beautiful home, you have another home somewhere else, you know, you have your vacation home in Traverse City area, and you want to be able to support that home. You want to be able to make income on that home because you see a benefit of that. But it's a concern when you're asking them to be hotel managers and a whole variety. So I'm sorry it took up so much time, but thank you very much for addressing this.
Thank you.
I'm George Clayton. I live at 775 Munson, and I agree with Jimmy. If I had people renting next to me, and they were partying at 3 o'clock in the morning, I had 30 years in the military. I wouldn't put up with that crap. And the police probably wouldn't like what I would do. So we're a residential area. We don't want crap. We don't want the renters. And what happens is if you start renting, the people who buy it, you're going to see that your prices for your house, if you're going to sell it, it'll go right away, and somebody will come in and buy it who doesn't live in the area, and he will rent it, which is bad because you're not going to have any way to take care of the people he's going to rent to. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton, for your service in the armed forces. Go ahead.
My name is Nancy Gonzalez, and I live at 709 Munson Avenue. I'm opposed to the proposed short-term rental ordinance, as I stated in my letter to the board on October 4th. This ordinance opens Pandora's box and hands a blank check to the rental community, as it places no limits on the total number of short-term rentals. Except for those few mentioned by Mr. Brown, virtually every home in East Bay Township could be a short-term rental. It places no requirements on the minimum size of property or proximity to neighbors. In my neighborhood, you can build 10 feet from the lot line. It places no guidelines on a minimum length of stay other than the verbiage of less than 30 days. What does that mean? A week, an hour, a weekend? It's all of the above. It places no serious penalties. A $500 fine is a slap on the wrist when you make more than that per day in your short-term rental. It has no protections to the adjoining residents. Your alternatives are to file a complaint or call the sheriff. You know, at what point do you become the whiner at 709 who called, once again, the sheriff's department? Since this whole Airbnb concept has exploded worldwide, traditional neighborhoods have been decimated by investors and developers snapping up residential properties to convert to short-term rentals, particularly in desirable and resort communities like ours. This has resulted in the eventual economic strangulation of those businesses and services which are not based on seasonal vacationers or provide those services which are not tourist-related, such as auto repair, pet hospitals, furniture stores, family doctors. Like the man before me said, have you ever visited Charlevoix in the winter? It's like a ghost town. It causes stress on police and emergency services with the overabundance of people here in the summertime. It causes an increase in the cost of property so that younger homeowners are forced out of the housing market, resulting in a decline in school enrollment. It forces full-time residents to have to police their neighbor's property and causes conflict between neighbors. And it causes a shortage of long-term rentals for local employees. As people see that the short-term rentals are more profitable, they go that route, sometimes evicting people or just not renewing their lease. Please look at the long-term consequences of this ordinance instead of implementing a short-sighted solution to alleviate the volumes of complaints at the township office. It appears to me that the township is bending over backwards in an attempt to legitimize the short-term rentals that have been operating, in the board's own words, as technically illegally for years. And I ask why. Shouldn't we just make them follow the rules? Isn't that what zoning is supposed to be for? I mean, what does residential zoning even mean now? How can anyone now purchase a home in East Bay Township in any residentially zoned area without fear of having a short-term rental next door? Where does it say that I and my neighbors should be precluded from the quiet enjoyment of our homes and subrogate our property rights so that an absentee owner can make a buck? If this ordinance passes, I'm afraid we'll become a community of rental properties, with the full-time residents paying the price in housing prices, lack of community services, and policing their neighbors' properties and the hollowing out of the residential atmosphere that makes this community a place of choice. Is this the future we want for East Bay Township? Where exactly does this fit into our visioning planning? Where on page 13 it states, enforce and or strengthen zoning tools to protect these residential neighborhoods. Please, please review this carefully and put the actual full-time residents of East Bay Township first. After all, they elected you. They're depending on you to make the right decision. And shouldn't they be your priority? Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, your name and address?
Yes, Carol Nelson. I live at 843 Munson Avenue. I've lived there for 20 years. I've loved every summer of the 20 years until this summer. And it's been a nightmare living next door to rental property. For some reason, the theme has gotten out that it's a great place to rent for bachelor parties. 15, 20 young men, 30-something, who act like they're 15 or 16. They start drinking at 10:30 in the morning. At 2 o'clock in the morning, they're still up, out by the campfires, fighting, yelling, firecrackers, fireworks, and it's not legal because it's not a holiday, but they're doing it anyway. I'm widowed. I have an alarm system, but it's very frightening to live next door to something like that that goes on day in and day out. So I beg you, please don't throw us under the bus, because that's what's going to happen. The young contractor that was here earlier said, can't buy anything East Bay Township for less than $400,000. Well, our houses are no longer going to be worth $400,000. We pay a lot of taxes. We have the most beautiful beaches. East Bay is known for that. And if I wanted to live next door to a rental with 20 people in it, I'd live next door to a hotel, because they'd probably take better care of it. And they probably would monitor what the guests were doing. But there's no monitoring in a house like the one I live next door to. It has been a nightmare this summer. And I'm just sick about it, that this is what's happening. And it's been short term. It's been 2 weeks. It's been 4 days. Because I've actually talked to some of the people that have rented. And it's been a nightmare. So please, please don't throw us under the bus. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, sir.
Hi. My name's Steve Bash. I live at 811 Munson, and I rent my house. And I have a written contract, which I have no more than 8 people stay in the house. If they break the contract, they're out. I think everybody here has a cell phone. If they're having the problems they're having, I'd be calling the cops. And the other thing is, you know, I've lived here all my life. I don't know how many of these people have lived here all their life, but it's like, you know, they come here, they must have rented, and now they want to shut the door on everybody else. I guess, you know, I think we're all wasting our time here anyhow, because I think the state's going to change the whole thing before it's done. But I guess everybody talks about how your value goes down. No, I think the value is going up. And also, people at rent lose their homestead tax exemption. So we're all paying higher taxes. You know, now we're going to pay a licensing fee. What about the neighbors that live by me that have family there every weekend? I mean, some of them got 7-8 cars in the driveway. It's not only rental people. You know, the Bay's a place to play. And I just, you know, I hope you keep it the way it is, but I think you got to license it, and I think you got to have some control. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Frank Tenbush, and we live at 743 Munson. And I am in 100% support of the first five speakers, Jimmy Mund, Jonathan Bick, George Clayton, and Nancy, and Carol Nelson. We, too, have the same problems that all of them have. I lived at Port Travers between two motels, and I had enough tourists then. And I purchased this house, and if you know the address, you know it's got a lot of money in it. And I don't want to see that money going away because of all this trash that's coming up and down. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, sir. And has everyone just made sure that they are signing in with their name and address? Okay.
I'm Bob Grease. I live at 357 Peninsula Trail on Spider Lake, and I'm absolutely in support of short-term rentals. I've had a short-term rental house for three seasons now, but I've owned the property for 40 years. I have just as many problems with people that live on the lake making noise at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's not much that can be done about that. But the rental property I have and many of the other rental property owners that I know, we live close enough. And if we've got issues with renters, we talk to our neighbors, we know what's going on. And like this gentleman said, we've got a clause. We can get them out, period. But we've been fortunate. We've never had to do that. But that's in support of it. I still want to address one other thing that's in this document, and that's the septic tanks. Rick, it's the first time I've heard the planning board, because I've been to every one of the meetings, and I've spoken at just about every one of the meetings, and that's on the septic tank things. We all care about the lake. We don't want it polluted. We don't want weeds growing. We don't want that stuff. But to discriminate against short-term rentals when many of them are used for 8 or 10 weeks a summer, and you got people that are living there year-round and are using those septic fields, and they're not subject to the same regulations for inspections. And I think it's just discriminatory against the short-term renters. That's it.
Okay, thank you very much. Hi, your name and address?
I'm Denise Brown. My address is 851 Munson. On the septic tanks, I agree that everybody should have to clean their septic tanks. I don't care if you're short-term or you're full-term. Let's get them clean for the lakes. But it's not even just if the partying is, I'm against it. The partying is one thing. It's, you know, it's a neighborhood and you live there. The runners will come on your dock and they have broken our hoist on our boat playing hide and seek, or their kids are sitting on the hoist. They will take your kayaks. They will even go out on your dock on the 4th of July and sit on your chairs. And then when you go out and say, we didn't think you'd mind, when we have a house full. And it's not that easy to constantly complain. It's not that easy to call the person who rents the house, because it would be all the time. Throwing the empty beer bottles on our beach, or the bottle caps where you're cutting your feet. It's a constant, and that's not how I want to spend my summer. I want to enjoy it with my family. We pay great taxes, like Carol said. And it's like you're invaded. And like the first gentleman said, they're on vacation. They want to have fun. There are no rules on vacation. We've all done that. But when you're living in your home and you're shutting your windows and the fireworks are going off and they bring their dogs and there's only supposed to be 7 or 14, but there's 25. We've had 32 people in a house. 32. 10, 15 cars. They're from Chicago. They're from Indiana. They're from everywhere. And we don't know who we're getting. You just wait and see who's coming next. And so it is like a hotel. And so for that East Bay strip of Munson and the investment from the people there and the taxes, and I understand that people want to rent and make their money, but you've got to understand it's a resident. It's where people are raising their families and retiring and living their whole lives. So it's invasive. I mean, I don't even know how. It's invasive. When you have to watch your stuff, so they're pulling it. Well, and then you feel terrible. You check your character, because I feel so awful. But if I can't let every runner take my stuff, you know what I'm trying to say? It's just it's ridiculous. And I don't know if any of you guys live next to runners, but it's especially in the summer when it's party time. People are outside. They're not locked in. It's a free-for-all, and there are no rules when people are on vacation. They're there to have a great time, and they do. So,
thank you. How are you?
Hi. My name's Gloria King, and I live at 847 Munson. I'm a full-time resident. We bought the property about 20 years ago, and everybody there, it was a family-owned home. Within the last couple years, two houses from me became rental, and two houses on the other side, one house became rental. So I don't live in a community anymore. I live in a business zone. And I think there has to be some kind of regulations that you don't get sandwiched in to a non-community. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Mary Burke, 99 High Lake Road. Like everyone here says, we all go on vacation. We do it. And when I'm on vacation, I still respect my neighbors. And we don't see that on our lake either. It's a small lake. And I've heard folks say, and we have landlords on our lake that say, oh, let me know if there's a problem. I should not feel like I have to please the renters. You know, it's not my job, and I don't want to do it. And we got some renters that will say, oh, if the cops get called, they lose their security deposit. So they don't care. You know, it's like we are policing them. I mean, they're ripping up and down the lake, way too close to shore, coming in before they should be out, before the hours of, what is it, 10 and 7? Doesn't matter. And they're on vacation. We've all been on vacation. But again, you respect, when you're on vacation, you respect the people around you. And that's not going on. I mean, it's constantly. It's like, oh, but we're just here for a week. You know, I've been on vacation for a week, but I still respect my neighbors when I'm on vacation. And that's, you know, they just feel like the rules don't apply. And I don't want to police my neighbors or, the, you know, my renters any more than the rest of the folks are saying. You know, it's like, go call me if there's a problem. I don't want to have to call you every day if there's a problem. It gets old. You know, I mean, this is my home. Come on vacation. Great. Have a good time. But be respectful. And that's not what we're seeing. You know, because we're on vacation. And like I said, I've gone on vacation. I've, you know, vacation with my owners, boom. You know, I go and do it. But I don't act like an idiot 24/7. And that's not what we're seeing. Thanks.
Thank you. Hello, sir.
Hello. My name is Paul Gonzalez, 709 Munson Avenue, and I can't really add too much more to what most of these folks have said. I think you get the general idea. What I want to address primarily is some of the questions or some of the issues that are defined in the policy that is written. First of all, when they talk about bedrooms in the definition, you know, you can drive some trucks through these rules and regulations. First of all, when they talk about a local agent, where the local agent can be located, it's 45 miles from where the rental is. So if we're going to call somebody and say there's a complaint, number one, who do we call? Number two, if they're 45 miles away, what are they going to do in that time? Especially when in here there's also the point where when you make an objection and then they notify the owner and this is a bad situation and they have 2 hours to remedy the situation, how do you do that when the person is 45 miles away? The second thing is when you have this two-hour time frame, again, who do you call except the police? And I've heard it again and again and again from most of the time, this casual, well, if you got a problem, call the cops. Well, how many times can you call the police? And what are they going to be doing on a holiday weekend? Especially when you do have a problem and it's a holiday weekend, how is the, you know, city going to notify that person when nobody's around? The fact that you have limitations as to how many people can be in the house by bedroom, well, hell, I'll just build 3 more bedrooms in the house. We have a house next to us that by this regulation, it's a nice house, but you can have 14 people there. And we have had sometimes 14 people there. So I would say that this, not only am I against the short-term rental, but even the proposals that are in this policy actually allow a lot of leeway, a lot of liberties that can be taken. And the biggest thing, though, is this definition of what a short-term rental is, under 30 days. Again, I don't have to point out to you that that could be almost a hotel-type quality. So I would urge you, please, to reject this whole proposal and maintain our neighborhoods and our residences as they should be in this place. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Pat Warner, live at 825 Munson. I would like to go back to the master plan that calls for maintaining quality residential neighborhoods, and I think more thought needs to go into what is a neighborhood. I think the long-term implication could significantly change our culture. I would like to note that I don't think many of the renters are necessarily bad, and I think there are many renters that are respectful. I just want to say that. The other thing is, I know this has to be compromised, but we have to think, I think the minimum must be at least equal to sex offender registry, because that could have an implication for what goes on in the neighborhood. Thank you.
We have other speakers during public comment. Sir, could you give us your name and address, please?
Butch Strait, 2847 Bash Road, used to be 2559 Chaperone Drive in East Bay. We still have that residence. I'm not thinking about short-term leasing it or anything. So, I do septic and well inspections, and that's my concern with this is the septic and well portion of this zoning is crap, in a word. it needs to be defined as what an inspection is going to be, because there are very different levels, and it's what you're looking for. What exactly, why are you doing the inspection? Is it just to be something that somebody has to do? Are you actually concerned about the septic system itself? Okay. The other thing is when you do get the inspection definitions clarified, and somebody calls the township to get more clarification on it, it would be nice to have somebody to know what they're talking about. Long Lakes inspection out there has, if a house has not been lived in 14 days, I have to go back and do a reinspection after the person has lived there for 60 to 90 days. I called the township. I asked them what I'm supposed to inspect, and they can't answer the question. One of the best things for a septic system is to have it set. When it's not in use, it's probably the best for it, as long as the roots aren't growing. So get with the health department, get with somebody else, get something that is going to be a benefit to the community rather than just a nuisance that somebody has to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Butch. Go ahead. Butch served on our Parks Board and Board of Trustees for 27 years, Butch?
29.
And just moved out of East Bay Township.
Well, who's Dalton? Hi, I'm Ken Warner from 825 Munson, and I'm afraid I'm late getting here. I just walked in while my wife was talking, too late to hear what she had to say, so I hope I'm not repeating too much, but I do have something to say. I'm sure that nobody here has mentioned, since as I was driving over on IPR, they're discussing precisely this issue. And just one of the little factoids, I do encourage you to listen to this, one little factoids was that last year nationwide 35% of the purchases of single-family homes were by investors, 35% of them. My observation is simply this. I fully respect the need to do long-term planning to allow for rental properties. Obviously, that's the direction we've been going as a society. But you're contrasting in this policy people who already reside and pay taxes to East Bay, who are worried about losing something fundamental about their neighborhoods, with the hypothetical future population of East Bay who aren't paying taxes now. And I would just ask you to keep that in mind as you pursue your deliberations. So some of us have been paying taxes here for quite a while, and we came in understanding that our residential area was going to be single-family owner-occupied, which is what it has been in our case in large part. There have been some long-term rentals occasionally, but that's basically what it is. And that's obviously threatened by the proposed plan. I thank you.
Thank you. And just a tip, whenever you haven't heard what your wife said, you must say, but she was completely right.
I know that.
Okay, do we have further comments?
Yes, my name is Paul Briody. I live at 695 Lake George Trail on Spider Lake. And I was glad to hear that you're putting some emphasis on the dry wells and septic systems. But I think what they really need to do is, when the cottages that was built, most of them was built two-bedroom, three-bedroom, so they sized the septic system or they put a dry well in, sleep, say, six people. Now they're sleeping 8, 10. They're advertising some of them 12 people. They could sleep 12 people. Well, that's putting a big strain on the septic system. And I think what if you're going to write a, or have to get a permit to rent your cottage, it should be tied to what the septic system is capable of handling. If it's designed for four people, then that's all you should be able to rent for. Then there's some type of law needs to be addressed so that the septic systems on the lake could be updated. The activity in our lake is in the last 5 years is probably more than doubled. And I think sooner or later we're going to get the same problem that East Bay or the city has with the E. coli in the water. And if we don't be proactive and address it now, we're going to have the proper values are really going to hell. So I'd like to see the septic systems maybe taken out of the permit for the rentals, but it has to be rented based on the size of the septic system for that house, the cottage, and then put the septic system through the health department. If a place sells, the system has to be brought up to date, or I don't, there's probably other ways you can do it, but we need to address the septic systems on Spider Lake. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Come right up, please.
I was up here once, but
oh,
I forgot
okay.
That's fine.
If you're renting your house, short term, whatever, and you're making $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a week off from it, is that not considered running a business out of your home? And
yes, the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. Okay.
Yes, that's what the courts have found, yes.
And this property that we're talking about were all residential. They're not, I don't believe the houses are zoned commercial. So that's breaking the law, isn't it? I mean, the houses are residential. They're not commercial. But you're renting it out. You're making big money on it. It's running a business out of your house. How can that be legal?
So we'll be addressing questions and going through specifics that the board has in a bit, but we note okay. Your question.
I forgot that I was going to ask that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comment? It's looking like no further public comment. Okay, because I'm going to close the public hearing and then the discussion will revert back to the board. So if there's anything further, just make your way up to the podium. Okay, seeing none, it is about 8:40 and we will close the public hearing portion of it and return the commentary back to the board and staff. I guess that, you know, I would just like to start kind of with that fundamental question to Rick and Brian, since it's kind of right there. What is the reconciliation between it being defined legally as a commercial activity for rentals under 30 days and the existence of that in, you know, residential type neighborhoods? How does that reconcile?
You want me to take it or you want to take that?
Let me take a stab at Rick. It was my understanding that the township, before we launched into enforcement actions against short-term rentals, wanted the opportunity to review and decide whether they wanted to allow short-term rentals in some capacity. If in fact the township makes the policy decision that it does not want short-term rentals, then you're going to line up a bunch of enforcement actions against those current operators that, in fact, are operating in a residentially zoned property. Anything to add to that, Rick?
No, I think that pretty well summarizes. I mean, for a long time, there have been short-term rentals prior to probably the dawn of zoning in the township in 1958. There's been kind of as a relative newcomer, kind of an unwritten standard operating procedure where we've let them operate in the past as long as they had a minimum 7 days. Well, it turns out that the courts are finding that that's a commercial use and you can't do that. You have to prohibit commercial uses in your residential districts unless you specifically allow them. This ordinance would specifically allow them as a use in a residential district, provided you get your licensing and meet all the standards of the standalone ordinance. As Brian had mentioned before, we didn't go with the zoning because you would have too many variations of nonconformity that you could never keep track of. So this brings us back to a baseline, a starting point. From this point forward, if this is adopted, everybody has to follow this set of rules. Is that necessarily the best answer? Some would say yes, some would say no. Obviously, it's going to be a matter of personal opinion on that. We run the risk of the state deciding it for us all. And there are bills before the state that would supersede local control on short-term rentals and essentially allow them everywhere.
Is that specifically with zoning ordinances?
That would be zoning, not standalone ordinances. That's another reason we went with a standalone ordinance versus a zoning ordinance. So it's a sticky wicket, to use an old
croquet. But again, it also depends on what the state regulates and what the ultimate wording is of any potential law coming out of Lansing. We just don't know whether it's going to apply only to zoning or whether it would apply to everything. Because the law has not been written yet. It's in the process.
So, Brian, just as a follow-up to the question for clarification, you mentioned when I said how do you reconcile a commercial activity then right next to residential homes, and you said if the township does not want to allow short-term rentals, they don't have to. On the other side of that, if they want to allow short-term rentals, is there a conflict with that being a commercial activity and a home nearby?
No, because that's why you're including the zoning ordinance amendment that allows short-term rentals as a use by right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Pursuant to getting the license under the licensing ordinance.
So okay.
You've, in fact, defined as a use under your zoning ordinance, so that's okay.
That's the whole purpose of that zoning amendment part.
The
other point I want to make was when this all came up, we talked with Peter, I believe it was, about, okay, we've got a bunch of short-term rentals that are technically illegal. How are we going to address those in this interim period where we work on the ordinance? And it was determined and discussed with him at the time that it's best to let that situation rest while we address and grapple with this issue for a variety of reasons, one of them, you know, being, I guess, fairness to some extent would be one term. Another one would be trying to not overpromise and underdeliver and things like that. But there, it was a conscious decision that we're not going to enforce during this period. I think another reason was also so we heard honest debate from both sides, because if we're going to suddenly start enforcing during the discussion, then people aren't going to come out and give their opinions, particularly if they've got a rental. If somebody has a rental and they come and state that at a public hearing and then we go and enforce on them, how is that fair? How is that a full-fledged public debate? So those were among the reasons that we...
Okay.
There's no. It doesn't make much sense to spend limited township resources enforcing a violation that might be very well legal after you go through this process.
Sure. Absolutely. Okay. So we have heard the overview from attorney, the planner, our planning commission representative, as well as the public comment. And, you know, I think one thing that is important to remember, and I know that all of the board members do, is that, you know, our public interest is in representing the community. We have this opportunity for public hearing, and we take that very seriously and consider what people say very seriously. But as we all know, we represented a community across the board, so that always on our minds as well as we're discussing this. So I guess I would just basically, it's about 8:50, turn it over to the township board for some discussion, questions, clarifications on the policy. Go ahead, Glenn.
I'm not shy.
Okay.
Question, and I guess this would probably be for the attorney. I understand everybody's concern because you got both sides of the fence. We've never done short-term rentals, technically.
As an ordinance.
Right. I understand the snowballing effect it may have. But here's the thought. Maybe this was discussed at the Planning Commission. I don't know.
Snowballing effect in which aspect?
It's going to grow. Okay. People are buying houses and turn them into short-term rentals. Can we look at if the board so saw fit or the Planning Commission, maybe limit it? Maybe have 50 or 100, and if you get more applications than that, have a time period and do a lottery on them.
If you were to do this on a clean slate, then I think that that's probably a good idea. But because you have short-term rentals already in existence, okay, and if you put a quota of, say, 50, then how do you determine which of the 100 or 150 that may already be in existence, how do you determine which one of those pre-existing short-term rentals are in fact going to be allowed the 50, one of the 50 slots? I mean, that's difficult.
So can you limit the amount someone can own then?
I mean, the number that an owner can own?
If I go buy a house and I want to register 5 of them as short-term rentals, and you say no, you can only have 2.
And a lot of these things, I want the board to feel extremely comfortable and the public to understand. We ask a lot of these questions, and it's not necessarily foreshadowing what we're thinking. We're just trying to find out what the parameters are. So I think it's a good question.
I think legally you can say that a particular owner can have X number of rentals. However, you have to understand that one person can form the ABC Corporation, XYZ Corporation, and then those individual corporations would in fact be the owner of the property, so that's easily defeated, if you will.
Or you can have your child.
So functionally, it's not. What about, Brian, if you were to say, let's just say hypothetically there's 500 rentals in the township. What if you were to say an open enrollment period during the initial year and then limit the growth of that? Could you do that for new applications? Do you see what I'm saying?
I think that's a possibility as well, sure. Say that you let the existing ones come into compliance with the license, and then say there'll be a no more than 2% or whatever percentage you then decide of new ones that could come into the township. I think that's perfectly allowed.
Okay.
That's okay. I'm going to go back to the septic systems, the holding tanks. I built my house in 1986. I have five daughters. Through the years, those five daughters have had friends that have stayed on our couch. I've had some that were boomerang rebounders, where they came back with children. There was one point in time I had 11 people in my house. I have a problem. I mean, what... If it's a seasonal rental or someone's using just the summers and they have the same size septic tank system that I have, what is their use different than mine? I'm more of a user than those rentals. I would prefer, if we're going to regulate, we regulate all, not use this opportunity to regulate people that wish to keep their parents' longtime home, or use it as an income source. I would prefer that we take a step back and we look at regulating all.
Whether you regulate all or a portion is a policy decision, okay? From a legal perspective, case law says that when you define a problem that you need to address, and in this situation you're talking about water quality and potential impacts from septic systems. Case law says that a municipality is not legally obligated to tackle the problem all at once. Okay? It is perfectly permissible from a legal perspective to regulate or address the problem in steps, if you will. Okay? But again, that's a policy choice of whether you address it all in a particular septic ordinance, if you will, or whether you take advantage of this particular opportunity to regulate at least a portion of the septic systems, okay? Legally possible, whether you want to go that route is strictly a policy choice.
Thank you.
Brad, board, other questions, comments on the ordinance in front of us?
Okay, a couple questions here. Under 6K, what is a cleaning maintenance schedule?
Basically, they would provide a document to the staff that indicates how often the tank would be cleaned and their planned schedule for the upcoming year or time frame.
Okay, and how would you regulate that? If they turned it in, maybe they didn't clean it as often as they said. Well, how do we regulate it?
That's true with any ordinance. How do we regulate, you know, short-term rentals currently? By complaints. How do we regulate violations currently? By complaint and or observation.
Okay.
We can't be everywhere 24/7 unless we hire.
And I realize that. Yeah. I guess my concern is when we make rules that we can't, and I don't want to say enforce, because if you got a complaint, you can enforce it. But we don't know what's going on. All we know is what they tell us. The other thing is 6N, What does pet shall be secure on premises? Are we saying that a renter dog cannot run within the yard on a rental unit? Is that what we're saying?
No, it says they can be secured on the premises or on a leash at all times. They just can't go running onto other people's yards.
The law says that. Right. But does that mean they can run loose on the rental property?
Yes.
Okay. And it said, Section 2, less than 30 days at a time as a in a calendar year. Does that mean that if you rent something less than 30 days at a time, so if you had a cottage, a house, or whatever, and you rented it, say, a couple times a year for a week or a weekend, does that make it a short-term rental?
Yes.
Okay. And just to clarify, Brian, you're saying that to set a limit on how many you're going to allow, and I guess what I'm thinking of, it's kind of uncharted waters out there. Even though it's been happening, I would hope that we would go into this slowly and find out what it ends up like before we just open the floodgate and then, you're right out in the middle of the flood. That's why I was asking about a number of units. Make them come in, get licensed, but you're only going to give out so many licenses, say the first year, and we're going to see what happens. And then, if you get more applications and you're going to give license, you pull numbers or pull names or whatever. That was what my thought was.
That's interesting, and I understand the point you're trying to get at there, but I hear what Brian's saying is how do you functionally decipher between who's granted and who isn't granted? I mean, let's just say, and we're jumping to the conclusion here that there is some licensing here and something's implemented, but you have two people who have made a $250,000 investment into a rental home. How do you decipher one gets one versus the other? I think that's why it would be maybe more equitable amongst short-term rental owners, if you were going that route, to say, okay, if you have a rental right now and you allow them to come in, license it the first year, allow those, and then you would be managing the number of those from there forward.
If you're going to do that, I guess if you're obviously we've got X number of short-term rentals currently in existence. I think that's a given. I don't know the exact number. You could say that the initial licensing time, if you will, is a year. We're going to give you a year in order to come in to get licensed. And then at the end of that one-year period, we're going to allow a 2% or 1% growth if you decide that, okay? If someone that has an existing rental does not take advantage of the one-year initial licensing period, if you will, then they may not get their license because then they'd be subject to the percentage growth built into the system, okay? So it puts the onus or the responsibility on the owner to act in that first year in order not to get, boxed out by the percentage growth. That's an option.
I think the technical term is they would be SOL.
Okay. Let me play the devil's advocate. Let's take Spider Lake. Probably got a lot of people here. Let's say that technically maybe 25 places are being rented short term. If I owned a place on Spider Lake and I wasn't renting it short term, what would prevent me from coming in and getting a license in case I wanted to do it, because you're going to close it down? You may end up with twice as many licenses that are actively renting just to protect their investment if they choose to.
Well, you could do – one thing that you could do is to show a history of rentals. You could have them produce contracts.
You could require that in fact, if they get the license, They then have to document actual rentals within a period of time, or the license becomes void.
Right.
That's an option.
And the other thing, and then I'll go to you, Mindy, because I know you've been wanting to make a point, is when you talk about 2% growth and you think, well, what is that, you know, cumulatively, and there's only so many properties, you know, when do you cap that? But, I mean, you could essentially at some point cap it, and then there's only so many allowed, and for someone to get one, there would have to be one that is taken out of the short-term rental.
You could do it at some future time, almost like the liquor licenses.
Right. And
there's only a certain number of liquor licenses within particular municipalities. So that's an option. I just don't want to squeeze somebody. I'm concerned about the existing individuals, okay, or the rentals, in some fashion that there's no good way to differentiate between them.
Okay. Okay?
But yet you give them a year, they don't act within that year, then again, they can be SOL.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Mindy. Thanks for your patience.
I think that it was South Haven, when they instituted their ordinance, they gave the existing rentals a week. Maybe it was 2 days to go ahead and get themselves registered. And that was, you know, if you're not done, you're not done, and then you have to get in the lottery system. So it was a very short time period that everybody could get into the system. If you weren't, you were out. The other thing is to answer Glenn's question, and it may not be relevant or not, but the biggest reason that people aren't going to just sign up is their homestead property taxes.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
You know, so I don't think you're going to get people signing up that actually live there. I think that you might get mm-hmm. people that have it as a cottage and already not paying.
Do we have that as an automatic forfeit?
Because if mm-hmm. they
if they, if they rent more than 14 days in a calendar year, yes. Yeah.
But just for register is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's assessing law that if they rent it, then
if they register as a short-term rental but they don't actually rent 14 days,
they'd have to prove that assessing-wise.
Is that what you're
that's
asking?
That's what I mean. Like right now, if they do that, what's compelling them not to do that?
Right now, there probably are short-term rentals that do have their PRE. But I imagine there is, you know, if it's not written in now, we would be able to write it in or have a process in which, if there's a short-term, if they are granted a license, clearly we would check that with assessing and make sure that they don't have a homestead exemption.
And with regards to the septic tanks, I totally agree that everybody should be tested and secured, but I think that this is a perfect stepping stone to start that process that we have in front of us.
Who determines what they have to pass? There doesn't seem to be any defined.
Well, I think that that Butch had a very good point there, and that, you know, that there are there is language that we can add to that to enhance that and have it very specific so that when there is a phone call, everybody knows what has to happen.
And I have a question about if the county has jurisdiction over the septic tanks, because they issue the permit when they're put mm-hmm. in, can we impose stricter rules? Because the county... if it's a health hazard, like backing up into a home or going out onto the lawn or whatever, there's very limited what the county can even do to make somebody fix their septic tank, is my understanding. So can we impose stricter regulations?
I think generally...
I don't know why not. I mean, there are communities that have inspection mm-hmm. requirements right now.
Yeah. I think the issue is what's the criteria that must be met in order to pass the inspection? And I think that easily...
But the other
could
they know.
Well, but you can say that in specific terms.
Right.
The way the ordinance was written is staff is not going to determine whether you pass an inspection or not. It's that you provide some proof that you have been inspected and passed.
Passed what, though?
Well, that you have a septic system that is fully functional and operating and is not going to crash next Tuesday because of guests coming, or you have a holding tank that's been cleaned within the last X number of time.
You can reference health department rules and regulations,
right,
if that's something you want to look at.
But at this point, we only have, they could bring in a receipt that they were, had their system pumped.
Yes, or inspected by a licensed inspector, yes. We're not going to go out. Certainly not qualified to determine whether or not they meet the standards, but if they present something from a licensed inspector or from the health department or who, you know, that says this meets our criteria, it's in good working order, then that's sufficient. They're asking to be a commercial business.
That is,
there's a cost of doing business. This is a cost of doing business.
Yeah, I think that needs to be updated in this. I think that we need to add that information in here. I totally agree.
So I have a few comments. I sat through the last several years of this discussion at the Planning Commission, and then we've had a couple public hearings here at the Township Board. So I've listened to probably everyone several times, and I fielded a lot of the phone calls and whatnot just because I was sitting on the Planning Commission and in the office. So I've talked a lot about this. I think, yes, we need to. I mean, I can see both sides. I agree with, you know, I'm in a neighborhood and I should be able to live in my house in peace and quiet. You know, frankly, I've lived in neighborhoods where the full-time resident has more people around than a short-term rental. And quite frankly, I mean, I lived next to a youth pastor and their youth group was there every week and they were slamming trunks at 2 in the morning regardless of whether I was living next door or not. So I don't think it completely is on short-term rentals that makes the disturbance in a neighborhood. You know, my kids had, you know, tons of people over. I mean, you know, people ask if I had a used car lot because I had so many cars in my driveway. So I don't think that we can say it's all due to short-term rentals. I do agree there are some times, and you get those that aren't considerate and aren't being good neighbors when they're renting. But that's, I think, what we're trying to fix and address with this. I went through this, and I have several things, you know, that I've highlighted in the ordinance, and I don't know if we want to nitpick them now because I'm not sure that we're at that point. But, you know, there are things like requiring the garbage to be picked up between 5 a.m. and 9 p.m. Well, I can't tell my garbage collection that comes through the neighborhood what time they can pick up my garbage. So I'm not sure, you know, there are things like that that I'm not sure that that's something that the township can regulate when you're not providing the service through the township. The appearance of a dwelling, you know, that's pretty subjective. I mean, what appears neat and cleaned up to me might not be neat and cleaned up to someone else. So I think some of this is beyond the scope of what we can do without more specific reasoning in there or definition of what it needs to look like.
Can I address the dwelling appearance?
Sure.
You're never going to be able to get specifics in ordinance regulations, but you need to have language similar to this, and it's purposely written in broad terms, okay? And so if I have a dwelling and I turn it into and make it look like a factory, okay, that's clearly clearly something that's not the residential or dwelling appearance, because you want to maintain the appearance of your neighborhood, okay? And ultimately, a judge will decide that, okay? And so you're going to be able to present to a judge, here are pictures of what this structure looks like. Is that a dwelling, or does it appear like a dwelling, or does it appear like a barn? Okay, or does it appear something else?
Some people want to live in a barn.
But again, that's the purpose of this generalized language, because it doesn't lock you in to a specific, because you'll never, ever be able to fully anticipate something. And that's why the general language is there, gives you a means to enforce. You take a picture, and ultimately a judge will decide. Okay?
The other thing I think when I see something like that is, you know, if we do something with respect to short-term rentals, there are instances where they're going to be home next to a year-round residential home. And again, what we're hearing tonight, for a large proportion, and I know it depends, you know, you hold it on a different night and a different, you could hear, you know, more for short-term rentals. We all have to take that into account. But what they're asking for is, well, number one, I heard a lot of them that weren't for short-term rentals. But, you know, even if they were, if you're listening, it's for a peaceful living dwelling, for the character to remain. And I think things like dwelling appearance speak to that. And it gives us latitude to make sure there's consistency for those year-round homeowners.
If you actually listen to the comments that were made today, what the public was telling you is that they have a problem with the nuisance factors of short-term rentals, okay? Not the short-term rentals themselves. If I have a short-term rental and I have three nuns, okay, that like to meditate, you'll never know they're there, okay? But when you have the fraternity party out on the beach at 3 o'clock in the morning, that's when you know that there's a problem. But so it's not someone that is opposed to the actual short-term rentals themselves, but it's the nuisance factor. And I've heard this over and over. You're not the only community that's going through this discussion. And I've gone through it over and over with other municipalities. And so what the in terms of balancing the property interests between the owner of the property and the neighborhood, the regulations are intended to address those nuisance factors. And if we need other regulations that address those nuisance factors, then we can write those in. But if you actually listen to what people are saying, they just don't want to be disturbed, okay? Because and they don't want to police their neighbor. Why are they having to police their neighborhood? Is because of the nuisance factors of these short-term renters. And I always go back, and it's an absurd example, but my three nuns. They could be quiet as a church mouse, and you'll never know that they're there. And people won't object to that situation. Mm-hmm. It's only the parties that they object to.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interject. I know it's not the time, but speaking on behalf, I'd like to state that it's not for the nuisance factor, it's also for the business factor in a residential area.
And we understand. We're,
I just don't want my word being misconstrued.
No, it's not. And we have all heard that. And we understand that is Brian's interpretation of the public hearing, and we all have our perspective and understand the public's comments. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you. I guess one of the things I would go back to is, you know, the specifics. When you start to get into, like, the public appearance and the trash and so forth, and I think that those are all things, you know, the septic system, those are all things that we've got to take a look at. But again, trying to build on what path we're going to follow, I start to look at, you know, do you allow short-term rentals or don't you allow short-term rentals? It becomes the fundamental question of where this board's at. And I think we've had discussion when there was a joint meeting of, you know, you've got a spectrum of choices. One end is you allow short-term rentals unregulated. Okay, so that can happen.
And that's basically what we have now.
It is basically it's fundamentally what we have now. And then the other is to allow no short-term rentals. It's just plain and simple, not allowed in the township. That's also an option available, right, Brian? And those are either end of the spectrum. What I hear from collectively the community and from board members, and again, that's collectively, not specific to a person or a board member, is not much tolerance for the extremes. So not much tolerance for saying, no, short-term rentals are not allowed at all, nor are they allowed unfettered, you know, ability to rent to anybody at any time. So anything in between is a policy, is a police power ordinance. It just becomes what's in it. I don't know. How does the board feel about that categorization, that either extreme is not acceptable? Is anybody in favor of either of the extremes?
No, I think, I mean, for me personally, yeah, I think we're somewhere in there. How do we take this, which I think is a good start, because you have to have some place to start, and boil it down to what we want?
Okay.
You know, do we do a work session so we can sit and cross out and redo, and or do we do that here?
Okay.
You know, I guess that's where I'm at. I don't know where we're at in that process.
I just want to hear from the other board members if fundamentally are we at the same place where the extremes aren't acceptable and we're somewhere in between. Rick, Sue, Mindy? What's that?
No, Brian.
Somewhere close to where we need to be.
Okay. So you agree then either of the extremes are not where you want to be?
No, not really.
Okay.
It's happening as it is.
Okay. When you say no, not really, you mean no, you don't want to be in an extreme, or you're fine with just leaving it the way that it is?
Well, I think that we need to do something.
Okay. All right. Sorry. I just want to make sure I didn't misinterpret what you were saying. Okay. All right. Sue?
Somewhere in between.
Yeah. Mindy, you were working with the Planning Commission, so I'm pretty sure you're somewhere there.
Yeah, tonight was definitely a different public comment than what we've heard before. I have not observed anybody on the parkway before being here. It was always in the lakes area.
There's been a couple, but yeah.
But it's not like today. Today was very different,
concentrated.
Very concentrated area, and usually it was the lakes area, and people that have been at every single meeting are not here tonight, which is very strange to me. And those are, of course, always the ones that were on the other side. I mean, you've been here a lot, and that, yeah. So you've been more than me because I missed July. So,
that's kind of good though, in a sense, because it reminds us that
there's,
you know,
more out there.
As a matter of fact,
yeah.
I was reading some stuff on public hearings, and it says here, remember, you represent the interests of the entire community, not just those at the public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a public hearing that is very different from previous public hearings is a good actual illustration of that point.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I don't like what's going on right now. And I think that our community is booming for change, and if we don't regulate it, we're going to be in a world of hurt very easily, very quickly. And I think that the opposite end of the spectrum, and these people that have been renting their cottages out on the lakes when there were only 7 cottages on the lakes years ago, you know, now there's hundreds of them on that same lake. I think that doesn't work either, and that's why, like I said at the beginning, I think we're going to a compromise. I think we're getting to that compromise place where that if we do have that neighbor that has rented out, and the people that are there are just out of control bachelor parties, bachelorette parties. Let's not be sexist here.
We did both.
Right, and they're both out there. We've had complaints on both. They've been there. Golf parties, you know, whatever party it is. I would say that, and I have totally lost where I was going.
That's okay, because I'm just thinking, as soon as you were saying this, it must be getting 9:30, because I'm just thinking, I've never taken a vacation like some of them I've heard of before, but some people must have a hoot of a time, I tell
Well,
you.
And we've used Airbnbs before.
Oh, have you?
There were six of us. Two of them were 4 months old. And we were in a very quiet neighborhood in Ann Arbor during graduation week, and we were the three nuns acting like the church mice. Nobody knew we were there. And I've also looked at a way for my family of now 24 to be able to get together somewhere in between. And our intent isn't to have wild parties. Our intent is to be together as a family, play cribbage, do whatever, but be together, because none of us have a house that large to be able to do that. I've seen both spectrums. I'm not a renter. I'm not someone that rents out anything. I don't have extra properties besides the one I own. But I'm always very respectful, and I would expect others to be very respectful. I understand our police force is very, very small and at times very overdone. I don't know that our two-person planning and zoning staff can handle all the issues either. So there has to be a compromise. I don't think we're here. I don't think I'm here ready for a vote tonight. I think I need some way to move forward.
Go ahead real quick, and then I want to give Mindy and Glenn the opportunity to answer.
I am Mindy.
Andrea.
Andrea.
One of the new people. I remembered where I was going.
Yes.
My point was that if you do have the bachelorette parties or the bachelorette parties, and they're horrible all the time, that they can lose their license. They can't do it anymore.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Once a short-term rental, and there's a process, and they would lose their ability to rent their property.
That's the biggest of the enforcement mechanisms. That's the biggest one.
It's not really the fine.
Yeah, the fine's not. That just be the cost of doing business. But it's the ability or to revoke that license is what's going to keep those property owners in have compliance and fast resolutions of problems.
No. Andrea. Mindy, Glenn, going back, and then
Andrea.
Did you want
mine?
You know what they did to me at the Metro meeting is they actually switched nameplates. Do you remember that? Anyway, Andrea, Glenn, again, on either side of the spectrum, I'm assuming, but I don't want to make that assumption, you guys are feeling, are you feeling similarly where the probably the best policy lies in between? Or
no. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes.
My concern, Phil, is what I voiced. I think you open this floodgate up. We don't know what's going to happen. I think we need to take baby steps, get out there and find out. And I hear that we already got people out there running. It's a violation of the ordinance, but we don't enforce it.
Yeah.
That's been that way.
Okay, but the thing is, if we do it in small steps, we're going to have some control. You open it up, you're going to have no control. There are two people aren't going to control it.
I guess I'm not understanding. What are you anticipating steps being? I mean, what are you?
Just what I said before about doing a lottery or whatever with X number. Come up with a number of rental units short term within East Bay Township. Originally, and I still feel this way, short term rentals in East Bay Township were always on the lake. Okay, we're talking about putting them every neighborhood that hasn't got a document that says they can't.
To be honest, I mean, not to interrupt you, but I think one of the things that has changed over the past few decades, when they were primarily just, you know, on the small inland lakes, is we've had different things change. Number one, when you're in that Pine Grove, Munson area, the proximity to the beach, the Traverse City State Park, the TART trails, Traverse City even, is kind of a draw and a pressure on rentals there. And then on that whole north side of East Bay Township, Horseshoes, well, it's not Horseshoes by the Bay, it's the Equestrian Festival. Thank you. It runs 7 weeks now. And, of course, people don't always rent 7 weeks. They often come and show for 2 to 3 weeks.
Airbnb 5, 10, 15.
Correct.
Years.
Right. Well, the one good thing is I think that at least we all, from a base standpoint, are moving toward something that, you know, nobody's saying allow them totally or disallow them totally. I mean, it's just, what does that policy look like? Andrea?
I have a question, and maybe Brian can answer it, but if a short-term rental loses its license, is there anything out there that gives superordinate power to the township to go to the Airbnb site or HomeAway or whatever it is and tell them, take that down? They don't have license to...
I just wondered.
I don't see that. Obviously, if they continue to in fact rent that when they've lost their license, that's a violation of the ordinance that can be enforced.
Andrea, one of the things I was reading something the other day, and I wish I had paid more attention to it, but I was just leafing through it. It was a municipality, and they were having problems. I think it was actually New Orleans was having problems with the site complying with their request to take down ones that were not licensed. So I don't know that the websites are yet in sync with complying with city and state or local ordinances. But one of the things I would like to see as a component when we do something moving forward is that when they advertise as part of their licensing component from East Bay, when they advertise, their license number must be put in that advertisement. And the reason for that is when we're looking for people who are out of compliance, you know, Leslie sees, you know, 10 rentals pop up that weren't there before. She immediately knows whether where to go, that they're compliant or not. She doesn't have to search through all of the rentals. So that could be also something that's helpful,
and
too.
And then that causes the cascade of the fees and then also the removal of the homestead.
How would the board like to proceed? It's 9:30. This is a big issue. I don't even perceive, unless somebody else does, that there's anything that we're going to pass tonight. We could have further discussion in November or December. We could hold a special meeting on this. I'd really like some input from the board on how they'd like to proceed, what they would find the most workable, or if staff has any suggestions. Okay.
Can I ask? It's not a question.
Sure.
You have to come up to the mic.
Well, you're all trying to decide what to do tonight, and you obviously can't make a decision. I would like to suggest that you all think about the question I had. What happens if you're breaking the law by running a business out of your home?
Okay, I appreciate that.
Gentleman here made the comment, but you didn't discuss it.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I think you need to go back to the drawing board with that question.
Thank you. Sue?
I would like to direct the planning and zoning administrators to look at the septic and well process and how to come up with a more conforming solution for defining the regulation of those. I think that would be a great first step in my being able to get behind it one way or another.
Do we have any way to estimate the number of rentals that we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Not with accuracy, but I would say it's in the hundreds, plural.
Well, due to the lakes and the system, you know, the geographic part of our community.
Leslie's thinking 500 plus.
I would think so.
Okay.
And I don't know that a lottery works. I don't know that that's an area that I would want a whole lot of time spent on. I do appreciate the allowance of a year for everyone to come in and become licensed. I don't know how that looks like for fees, but I really think that we have to address a more thorough mechanism for the septic and well or holding tanks.
Yeah, I will say I don't know, you know, that the lottery system, I'm not sure that it gets us quite where we want to be. I understand what you're trying to do, but I'm not sure that there isn't another another way to do that that offers more a more uniform application of the ordinance. Anyway, so would you guys special meet?
I would prefer to do this in a workshop. Just because I think it is so big, and I think there is a lot of detail to it that I think we need to not be constrained with other items on the agenda.
Well, we have a few large items coming up with the next 2 months.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, that's just my opinion.
We already have several things on November, and they're starting mm-hmm. to look at that. So, yeah, we can do a special meeting with this. We'll probably do it in the November, December time frame, maybe early December.
After the budget.
Or and January.
I do think getting in more information with respect to what Butch was talking about with the septic systems would be a good thing. Yeah. The other thing I think would be good is because we have all agreed that some form of a policy is needed as to where it lies on the spectrum is debatable, but also staff, we should start taking a look at the implementation of that and you know what that means and time frames for that and some of the processes, although I'm sure we won't have every detail nailed down, but we can take a look at that. I'm sorry, Sue, did you just say something about
maybe even January because of the different holidays?
Well,
I don't know if we can fit specials
in. I'd really like to try to get it through this year.
Well, I agree.
Because if we are deciding that there's going to be a policy, we want to have it done sufficiently in time.
I totally agree, but so we're coming up on some big times.
Sure. My only thought with that is in order to publicize this, you have to get a license, and whatever that time frame is, you know, you send a newsletter to every individual property owner in the township twice a year. So either December 1st or July 1st, unless we're going to do another mailing.
Unless we do a special mailing.
It would have, I mean, I would think something of this type you'd almost have to, it could go in the assessment change notice, I guess, in February. But, yeah, I'm just trying to look at not another mailing.
Right. Okay, so we will bring this back to a special meeting where we can get a date agreed upon. First, we really want to thank all of you who attended, all of you who are left.
Absolutely.
Here. And I did just have, we would be moving on to the added agenda item of the carpet purchase, but I did just have a note passed to me from Rick regarding an earlier agenda item and some further information. So if we could bring back the which topic it was on the cloud,
the public hearing on the lights.
Oh, I forgot about the public hearing on the lights. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. That's what happens when my what's that?
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Very much. Have a safe drive.
I have a question. If you do develop an ordinance, when do we get to see that?
So I would tell everybody who's here and communicate to your neighbors of who left that you can follow everything on our website. Our meeting dates are posted on that front calendar. You'll see meeting dates, as soon as we know of a special meeting, they get posted on there. Then, if you go under Township Board, click on it, you'll click on meetings. It'll say minutes on demand, new minutes on demand, or new meetings on demand.
Recent meetings.
Okay. Click on that, and you'll come up to Township Board. You can get all of the agendas and the packet items. Everything that we get here that we give to the trustees is posted on there as well. The only things that might not be in there is if we have something last minute that we're getting to the board, a letter or something.
But a public hearing notice would be there.
Yep. A board. Everything is
meetings on the front board at the north entrance. On that board, we are required to post all meetings there. But for your convenience, when they are posted there, they go on the web within hours or a day of that as well.
Yeah, I just want to say I find it appalling.
Oh, ma'am, this is not the point in time. I really appreciate.
This isn't about the
Even it's not, we're in the middle of our meeting and we're moving on to another agenda item. I truly appreciate your being here, but we need to move on with our meeting. So thank you. Okay, we're moving on to the public hearings for the streetlight assessments. So these are, Tracy, do you want to go over this, please?
Sure. This is the annual analysis of the streetlights, and we do this every year. We set the amount that will show up on the winter tax bill, and we have three lighting districts. They're all in the business park, and in the public hearing notice, it lists the annual amount that will show up on the winter bill for all three of them. So.
Okay. All right. So this is just one public hearing for all of these three assessments, correct?
Yes. I think you can do the public hearing all at once, and then it's
whatever the pleasure is. You can open and close each one, or you can do them all.
Okay, so we will open a public hearing at, what is it, about 9:37 on resolutions 2017, 15, 16, and 17, which are the three lighting special assessments. Peninsula Business Park.
They're all in Peninsula Business Park.
One, two,
sorry,
and
there's
three.
Phases 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. All right. Is there any public who would like to make a comment on the public hearing for streetlight special assessments in Business Park 1, 2, or 3?
Sorry, did you open it officially?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
I missed that.
I don't see any public comment for the public hearing, so we will close that at about a minute later at 9:38. And bring that back to the board. Is there any discussion or a motion?
I make a motion to approve resolutions number 2017, 15, 16, 17, confirming the special assessment district 01-1L/93, 2L/95-2L, and setting the 2017 bill amount as presented. Did I miss one?
No, sorry. They're just, the districts are 01-1L,
93-2L, and 95-2L.
Sorry.
There we go.
Is there support for that motion?
Support.
Okay. So there's been motion and support to approve the resolutions for the three lighting special assessments. We'll do a roll call vote. Ann?
Corte?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
And Friend?
Yes. Okay, now that I have lost my agenda buried under all of these papers, I do believe, thank you, that we have the, I would like to take care of the carpeting. We added the carpeting tonight to see if anybody has any questions on that or a motion. As you'll see, we had the three companies, floor covering brokers, Bayview Flooring, and Carpet Galleria, all bid on those. They were all pretty competitive, and I really apologize because there is a typo on that.
Are they exactly the same?
No, they were not exactly the same, and I just got that.
Yeah, I wondered that.
The Carpet Galleria one, the bids are enclosed here, but the Carpet Galleria one was, as you can see, $16,987.
And Brian asked me, and I went, I don't know, I wasn't part of it. I guess they're the same.
And 87 cents. No, that was just a typo on my part.
900 and what?
$16,987. 87. And like I said, you have the bid there behind it.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
So I will make a motion to approve purchasing flooring and installation from Floor Covering Brokers based on, quote, ES700653, ES700519, and ES700653.
Okay, is there support for that motion?
I support.
Okay, the motion has been made and supported. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes. I appreciate your help with that. And really, if you see Val, thank her.
Yeah.
Because she's been dealing with all the companies and all of the different stuff, and will be doing the logistics. She is. She is definitely.
Done a great job.
Now, you mentioned that we had something regarding Easttown, the PUD extension.
Yeah. After the questions that came up earlier this evening, and I'm going to say this. If you have questions like that, please bring them up ahead of time. Don't ambush us in the meetings, please, with that, especially if there's some time.
Excuse me. I never got the information till this afternoon, so this wasn't something I was setting on. And it took me a while to read through it to find out exactly what was going on.
Okay.
So it wasn't an ambush.
Okay.
But in the same hand, if we're going to talk about that, let us know exactly what the rules are. You knew that.
Okay.
It was, no, let me finish. You knew that that would be on the 60 days. You should have brought that to our attention.
Okay.
It is not
Whoa. We're going to end this right now. We're not going to reprimand staff, and staff is not going to reprimand a board. If you want to go on with the additional information.
Staff did not know the answer to the question at the time. It turns out that both previous requests were brought in 60 days before, and this one was as well. The Township Board approved the original PUD on December 11, 2008. The staff report mistakenly said that it was approved in October of 2008. That was the Planning Commission, but it went to the Board after that, who makes the final decision on the PUD, and it was December 11th of 2008. So turning in the request on September 7th of 2017 is nearly 3 months prior to that.
Okay, but if you read what the ordinance says, or the substantial extension, the extension was done September 12th of last year is when this board approved it. That's what I'm talking about. This was in your letter.
So September.
It says here that the application for an extension of a special land use permit authorizing a planned unit development must be filed at least 60 days prior to the expiration of the original
Finish reading what it says after that.
Authorizing a planned unit development or the expiration of any extension previously approved by the board, whichever is applicable. Okay.
There you go. Because there, if you're talking about it, on the original one, if there was no extension, then you'd go by that date. If there's an extension by what it says there, you go by that date.
So I guess the point that I would make is the motion.
It doesn't say necessarily.
The motion that was passed by the board takes it back to the Planning Commission for clarification, and it basically stops the clock for that period of time. When that was my understanding, correct? Is that what everyone else understood
here?
That's
what I understand.
Yes.
Okay. Then we can still continue with that motion because...
Well, the question is, do I still take it to the Planning Commission?
I think you should. Take the ordinance and the dates. If there were any errors, correct those. If there's any clarifications, correct those. Take those to the Planning Commission, and then they can define that and forward it back to us. Absolutely. I think that can still hold. Is that fine with everybody?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We have our second public comment. Brian's smiling. Do you have public comment, Brian?
No.
Okay. All right. So we don't have any public. Linda, public comment. The second portion, in all seriousness, for public comment. There is no public right now for comment. So if there are no objections, we are adjourned. And I would like to say thank you because these were not necessarily easy issues. So... Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.